The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Live from inside Juan's car on the way home from Colorado Springs Comic Con, you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box with Juan and Gabe.
It's so tingly.
Hey, everybody, before you get into the show, which I know you're super excited to hear because every fucking show of Thinking Outside the Long Box is amazing, we want to thank our Patreon supporters, Chad, Ryan, Derek, Doyle, Devin, Taylor, Jason, Steve, and now Christine. Thank you so much for being a part of this show by donating to us on Patreon. If you, too, would like to support this show and keep it going every other week after every other week, then you can go to patreon.com/TOTLB, where you can get your choice of all sorts of cool bonus videos and awesome prizes like hats and t-shirts, original sketches. I don't know if you guys follow Tim Husky's artwork on Instagram, but one of those original sketches got colored and it was fucking amazing. So join us today at patreon.com/TOTLB. And to those of you who are already subscribed, thank you so much. We appreciate you more than our own assholes. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. On the line, we have Russell Nolte from Wannabe Press. He is currently in the midst of running a Kickstarter for Cthulhu is Hard to Spell. It's an anthology book full of Cthulhu mythos stories that honestly is a lot of fun. I got the chance to read pretty good chunk of it. Zero spare time with all the children and whatnot, but Russell, how are you doing today, man?
About as well as you can be in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign, but, you know, it's going very well, so a lot better than if it wasn't going as well as it was.
Right? It's definitely that high stress, like, probably not getting a whole lot of sleep.
Well, you know, this is my eighth campaign, so I'm pretty good at dealing with the stress now. But I'm also very bad at dealing with stress ever. So I'm much better than I used to be at dealing with the stress of these campaigns. But I made a kind of a math error when I was designing this campaign, which is I thought – so my previous two campaigns had reached $25,000 each. And I thought that they had each done it in under 2 weeks. Figuring that this would be an easy goal because it's almost 4 weeks. But I did not realize that the first one hit $22,000 in 44 days and the next one in 35 days. And this campaign's only 27 days. So that's been causing me a little stress. But luckily, you know, we've been on less than a week and we're over $17,000, which is most of the way to the goal. I think we're $4,000 away, which I'm pretty confident we can hit. But I would be lying if I said that having to raise $22,000 before you get dollar one is not unstressful.
Right. It is kind of like an intense moment where you're like, wow, I'm going to not be able to focus on anything else until this gets funded.
Well, yeah, I know. I launch other products and, you know, when I'm launching a book on Amazon or launching a course, like even if it goes very poorly, I get the money. Like I get the money. The money's my money. Like I still get to keep it. Whereas in Kickstarter, it's this like this moment where you're like, I don't have any money, and then I have a ton of money.
Right.
And that's always a weird feeling that day that you fund, because up until that moment, it's this kind of ethereal thing. And you're like, well, I have 17,000 nothings right now. But then at some point, it will flip over, hopefully, to $21,667. And you're like, now I have $21,000, not just nothings.
Going back to the beginning of this,
Tell me a little bit about the birth of the concept of Cthulhu is hard to spell.
So while back in 2015, I'm going to go all the way back. I had done my book, Katrina Hates Dead Shit. And after that book, we had a large gap in our calendar. And the thing about my company is I do have a publishing company, but mostly I publish my own stuff, which means there are hundreds of people that I have on lists that I would love to work with and was never going to get a chance to. And so the chance to do an anthology with a bunch of them allowed me to work with a bunch of people I literally never thought I would work with. So I decided to do, pull my audience. 2016 was not a banner year for Wannabe Press because I had released a lot of things that weren't monster or comic related. But I had talked to a lot of our audience and they had said their thing that they love was monsters. A thing I love is monsters. And a lot of the indie creators that I was friends with were ones that they also liked. So I set out to make this book, Monsters and Other Scary Shit, which was our first anthology. And I thought it was going to be a one and done book. Like, I didn't even know it would come out in hardcover. I had no idea what it would do when it came to Kickstarter. I figured it would make, you know, 15 grand, I think was the goal. Maybe 16 grand was the goal, somewhere around there. And I was like, okay, well, like, if it hits that, great. If not, I'll just like keep printing in the way that I print my books and it'll be fine. I definitely did not expect it to hit $27,000. And after we had hit that goal, I really wanted to keep that feeling alive of working with creators. And so when the book came out, I kind of asked our fans the good and the bad, like, what did you like? What didn't you like? And they kind of told me, they liked a ton of it, but they wanted it to be full color. They wanted it to be all ages appropriate. They wanted it to be like a better theme than just all sorts of monsters. And so it's really a book that we design with our fans, the anthologies, which is the great thing about it is like, these are what I say in the thing, it's a love letter to Lovecraft, but it's made from fans for fans. And it's really true. Like, it's our chance to geek out with our audience about something that is normally not true. Like, it's very hard for me to geek out about my own books. You know, it's like, I do it because I love them, but it's kind of weird. But geeking out about Lovecraft is something, you know, we can do to give back to fans. And so when I go to do a book, I always try and figure out, like, what does the lore not talk about a lot? Or, like, for the monsters book, I wanted to make a book about monsters that wasn't all horror. I wanted to show all sorts of kinds of monsters because I was sick of being called a horror publisher when I've only made one horror book and most of my other books are fantasy. They just happen to have monsters in them. And so with the Cthulhu book, what I really always liked about Lovecraft the most was I think he's a very underrated theologian. So, and you don't often see his monsters in the books. You don't, like, there's talk of them. There's all these, like, moments where you kind of are grappling with, like, what the monsters look like or what they do, but you don't often see the monsters in any of the stories of Lovecraft or even in any Lovecraftian horror. That's kind of the point of Lovecraftian horror in a way. The existential dread is worse than the actual dread of the monsters. So I wanted to see the monsters, though. So when we did this book, I wanted to iterate on the monster anthology. So it was monsters from cute to scary and everything in between, but they were all Lovecraft gods and monsters. So I guess that's the very long-winded way of saying, like, I asked my fans what they wanted and they asked me for a book about Lovecraft that was all ages that dealt with monsters. And so this is what they got.
So it's awesome that you talked with fans of, like, you know, your previous books, your previous work, and then they were able to convey to you, this is the thing that we want. And then you were able to create it. Like, it seems like a really intelligent mechanism to to actually just go to people that have already invested in your company, invested in the things that you're creating, and say, what would you like? And
it's my company is very simple. It's I ask people what they want and then give them that. It doesn't always come around immediately because I'm often in the process of books and doing things, but you know, like Nicholas Torres was always our most requested artist, and Pixie Dust became a book that I made that was drawn by him. A couple of our other most requested artists we're now doing books with, but like books take a long time to make. And the same thing with the anthologies. So with the Monster anthology, I had known that monsters were what people really liked about our company all the way back in 2016. But it took until the beginning of 2017 to actually put that into practice. So my company is not complicated. It's mostly made around asking people what they want and then doing that.
When you're compiling like all of these like stories from so many different like artists and writers, like how do you kind of like get the structure of the book together, put it in an order that makes sense? Like you said, there's a lot, it goes from like cutesy kind of stories to very serious, like, you know, Cthulhu mythos creation stories. And just, there's such a wide gamut. Like, how do you kind of process all the different stories and make it into a cohesive anthology?
That is a great question. And I hope this is not too boring because I'm going to answer it. I believe that a good anthology is a lot like a mixtape. So I will say that there are anthologies that are all tonally the same. Often those are that are all comedy, that are all short, that are all relatively stylistically cartoony or stylistically all very realistic, or they're all stylistically dark. That is a thing that like that is a choice that you make as an editor before you do the book, and that is what you put in the prompt of the book. For myself, I want to have a bunch of different tones that go all over the place because I think that makes for a more interesting read. The problem comes when you make the certain stories too long and then like you're like, oh, I really just wanted a comedy, and now there's like three really long dark pieces. So that is there are some challenges there, but I think that having if you can make something that is tonally vast and make it fit well, I think those are my favorite anthologies. But it's hard, and it's a lot like making a mixtape. So I used to make mixtapes in college.
For our younger listeners, those are cassettes where you could record music off of other cassettes in an order that you wanted your friends to listen to them to.
It would be like a playlist.
Right.
Now.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Making a YouTube playlist is very similar to this, where like there's all sorts of different artists, but they all like fit a mood. Like this is my Monday mix, Tuesday mix. I used to do like ones every day. And so it was really important for me, for instance, probably the first story has to introduce somebody and make people understand what the story is about, what the whole piece is going to be about. And I think that the third story is the Eternal War. So it is the origin of the Lovecraft mythos told by my friend Eric Young. If I wanted the right beginning piece, I think, and I wanted it to feel like Lovecraft the whole way through, I would have picked this first. It's a perfect beginning piece because it tells the origin of the Lovecraft universe, but it does so in a very, it's not dry, but a very, it's very tonally Lovecraft. So if I put that first, I feel like it would have the people's expectations would have been that this was going to be a tonally very Lovecraft book. So what I did was I put that third after I put a YA. So the second story is a kind of a YA like Hardy Boys meets Lovecraft story. It's tonally all ages. And the one before it is just like a meditation on life. So both of those were all ages that when people read them, they would be able to see that this and the first one isn't even like a traditional Lovecraft story. So I wanted people to see that what they were getting was something different than what they've seen before. And then the book is about, so those are how, that's how I pace the beginning. And then the end needs to be kind of what you want people to think about as they leave the book. And then the rest of the, when you're doing a totally all over the place book, the rest becomes about pacing. When do you want people to feel scared? When do you want people to laugh? How long do you want the pieces to be? And it really goes like a rhythm of a crescendo from beginning to end, just like in a book or in like a single graphic novel, where it's like, this is a good place for a laugh. This is a good place to like think, okay, we had a really dark piece here. Now we need to lighten it up. And this one, and then like, but we don't want the funniest laugh right after the dark moment. We need to have like more of like a contemplative story or like a neutral story. So the book becomes about like pacing how you want people to feel throughout it, which is not dissimilar from a graphic novel, but or a book. But it is different than how most people think about an anthology, which is like a lot of people, I think that they just kind of throw all the pieces together. But it actually takes me quite a long time to figure out where the long pieces are going to go. So I don't want five long pieces next to each other, nor do I want five short pieces next to each other. So I have to pace the length with the tone, with style of the book, and make it all make sense throughout, so that people have a satisfying experience and don't put the book down because it was either too dark or too light, depending on their taste.
It's cool. It's cool that you think about it as like a whole and try to piece all those pieces together. Cause like you said, I think a lot of anthologies are just like, this is what we have, and this is where they go. a long time ago, a friend and I put together a fiction anthology. And we had to do the same thing, like which pieces go first, which pieces, you know, set the tone for the book, that kind of thing. And it was a hard process. It was a really interesting thing to work through. So it's cool that you put that much thought into it, because I don't know that a lot of people do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what sets Wannabe Press apart, is like we obsess about all of these things about story and tone, and like our books are not cheap. If you go to our Kickstarter, we're only offering a $40 book and a $10. And like we offer other things, but like the book is $40. It's a hardcover book. It's 176 pages. And like people back it because they know that we pay attention to these details. And one of the things that, for instance, was we got wrong with the Monster Anthology is the page flip was not satisfying. So because the book, the first anthology was between 1 and 15 pages, all the stories didn't start on the right hand side of the page. Sometimes they were on the left hand side of the page, which doesn't seem to be that big a deal until you actually feel it in person. And you start looking at how, like, sometimes people had to look at this way or they missed the story because it wasn't as satisfying as it could be. And so, when we do things that like are not super satisfying to our audience, we want to correct them for this anthology. So that was something that was corrected for this one, where all the pages are 2, 4, 6, or 8. Because people also said that some of the stories dragged on. And when we read the book and talked to people, they said it seemed like 8 pages was about the length that people were willing to commit to a book. Without it, even or commit to a story that they didn't love, they would give it 4 pages and then they would flip through like 2 more pages and be like, okay, it's almost over. And it was long enough that we could also ask creators to do it. And so that was another thing, was we wanted to like, make it enticing for really great artists to want to do this book. And that meant making sure that we had like the requirements were enough that great artists could do the story without missing the deadline or thinking that it's too much for them. So all of those things are like carefully studied so that each iteration of a book is better than the last. Even though I love the other book, the monster book, this is just an iteration. And because it's a second attempt, it just is vastly better for so many reasons.
It's awesome. Like, you know, each book you put out is just you improving on the last one. Like that's the only way you can do it. It's when I listen to the first episode of this show, it's unlistenable to me, you know, but now that we've been doing it for 4 years, I'm proud of the product, but in another 4 years, I'll be like, oh man, those episodes were terrible too. Like it, you know, you're just constantly trying to improve and improve and improve. I mean, that's the only way to do it.
So, yeah. I mean, I allow myself to enjoy my previous books, knowing that they were a point in time and that they were the best that I could do. And I really think that they're great books, but the books that I make are better now. It's when people say, what's your favorite book? I'm like, this one. I just made it. It's fresh. It's the newest, the best thing that I've ever done because it's the newest thing that I've ever done. And you iterate there. But I do think that creatives often look down on their previous work when they should ask themselves, is this the best work that I could make at the time? And if it was, while I can't read a lot of my old scripts, I can still enjoy that they had brought me to the process of where I am now.
If you were to ask Juan, he would just say, I'm bad at enjoying things. So
I am very bad at enjoying things too, but it is that is a very helpful thing for me to, when I go back and read my book, to be like, I made this and it was the absolute best thing that I could make at the time with the knowledge that I had. And if you've done that, I think you can proudly, I think people can look back on that stuff with pride. I had a podcast for 194 episodes. And those first episodes are very hard for me to listen to also. But I can still say, because the last episodes were quite good, like how much I changed and where and how it tracked from the beginning. Like, oh, man, like this is how this started and this is where that came from. And like that episode is where I learned how to do this. And at least it allows me to enjoy it in a sense. But you're right. It's never easy to enjoy the stuff that you've made because you always see the flaws.
Right. So when you're looking at the broad spectrum of this book, I mean, like you said, there are very serious stories. There's very like intense looking stories artistically. There's very like cartoony stories and, you know, YA level stories. What are some of the highlights of the book for you?
So I think the first story is a highlight for me and the last story is a highlight for me because I'm currently working with those artists on books, on books that I'm co-creating with them. So Angela Fullard has always been one of my favorite artists and I'm so excited to work with her. And then Eric Lervold has been my artist for my anthologies for, quite a while for both of our anthologies. And now I'm doing a book with him as well. So the first and last stories, I think, are a great encapsulation of like they're great. The first story is a great way to ease in. And then the last story is a great way to ease out of the book. And okay, so I'm going to go through this and I'm going to feel real bad about talking about which I don't talk about. But one of the ones that people really like is The Eternal War that I talked about from Eric Young.
Yeah,
because he actually studied like the beginning of the origin of the Lovecraft universe and then like made a thing about it.
So what's really, before you dive into it, what's really crazy to me about it is I've read a lot of like some of the pre-Christian, like Gnostic, like gospel stuff. And this is all that same thing. And I thought that was really, really cool. This was the highlight for me of the things that I got to read in the time that I had. Like, I love this particular story.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this is his first sequential piece also. Like, he is an illustrator. And one of the things that I love about these anthologies is a lot of people had did their first illustrated story in our anthologies. A lot of them had their first published credit in our anthologies. And Angela had her first story published in our last anthology. And now she has gone on to have a successful Tapas Pay and a bunch of other stuff. And Eric is another one who, you know, it gave him a reason and a safe space to make a story. And I love how it turned out.
It is genuinely like a super, super cool looking story. And just the tale that it's telling, like this creation of like the world and the old gods is really, really fascinating. So before we did the interview, you had talked about literally writing the book on being a creative person. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So the book is currently called Sell Your Soul, How to Build Your Creative Career. We're going to rebrand the cover, but it's basically everything I've learned on my journey to be a six-figure author or dozens of interviews that I did with successful creatives, plus questions that people asked at my table and online for me for years. And so it's about how to make better stuff and how to like improve making your content, the basics of sales. I was a sales manager at Sprint before I left to form my own Verizon dealership and my own company. How to build an audience from scratch, how to sell at live events, and how to launch a product. So those are the main pieces of like what it takes to build a creative career. Like everybody is going to have some sort of live event experience, whether it's speaking on a stage or sitting in a signing or doing live books. Like you're going to have to do live events. You're going to have to launch products, whether it's on Kickstarter or on Amazon or on Etsy. You're going to have to build an audience who wants to know, like, and trust you. You're going to have to know the fundamentals of selling, like building a sales funnel and creating value, and you're going to have to make something great. So while most business books, the business book community is designed to answer one question for you while making you have to while interesting you in buying the next book, which will answer your next question. So most business books are wholly unsatisfying for that reason. Like there's a formula for how you give just enough information that somebody is too confused to do the thing you just told them how to do. And so they seek you out.
So then like you have to buy the next book, which leaves you confused, and you buy the next book.
Right. Whereas this book is probably to my detriment in many respects, like a book that is self-contained. And I think all of the knowledge that you need is contained in there. I do have a course that is the implementation guide for that book. But I think the book is what you need to know on a broad spectrum to make a career successful. And the courses that I teach on top of that are just about how to do it quicker. So what happened is this is another book that I made basically for my audience and with my audience's input. They asked me for this stuff. And then when they read the book, they said, great, I know all this information. How the heck do I actually put this in practice? And so I made the course about how to actually put the thing in practice that they learned in the book, only because they asked, because there was too much information almost. And that book all goes back to me having hundreds of conversations with people at tables their eyes went glossy because I just talked to them for so long. They couldn't remember anything I said. So it's like, I'm just going to write all this down so that someone could just read it at their leisure. And then I don't have to spend 30 minutes talking to them.
Right. That's awesome. Well, I'm going to go out and pick it up because that sounds like exactly one of the things that I need to figure out in my life.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's most people have problems with one of those five things. And what's weird is even people that have an audience or sell really well at live events, it's really hard for them to deconstruct how they did it.
Right.
Or they may be really good at talking to an audience online, but not in person. And so it's like really like almost everyone I've ever met has had a problem with one of those things. A lot of people have an audience, a big audience, and they literally never launch products to them to sell. So like they just have this big, massive audience that makes them no money, but it's massive. And so I'm very proud of that book. It's been out about a year. And, you know, I think it's helped a lot of people. I don't know. People tell me that it helps them. So I like to believe that it does.
That's awesome. So Russell, in wrapping up, why don't you let everybody know how they can, you know, find your Kickstarter, find your book, just all the different ways that they can, you know, get a hold of you and find out more about what you have going on.
Sure. So if you want to learn more about the creative book, it's called Sell Your Soul, How to Build Your Creative Career. I also have a website called The Complete Creative, which does some advanced tactics that didn't make it into the book that I've learned since then. So things like The Secret to Being a Self-Published Author. It's more author folk, but there is a lot of stuff on building an audience and social media and all sorts of stuff that you can use to build a broad creative career. That's also where you can find my podcast, The Business of Art, which ran for 194 episodes. And it's where you can find my courses also. If you want to find more about me, you can go to my website, russellnolte.com, or my company site, wannabepress.com. If you want to back the Kickstarter, I will give you a quick pitch of Cthulhu is Hard to Spell. It is 35 stories from over 60 creators about the gods and monsters of Lovecraft. It sits perfectly along with people who love Lovecraft but don't get enough of the monsters, and somebody who wants to indoctrinate someone into a realm of creepy but doesn't have a good starting point. The two best reviews that we got were from two different people. One of them was someone who didn't know Lovecraft, and they said, I didn't know Lovecraft at all, and I didn't feel left behind. So that is someone who was like, I want you to love Lovecraft like I love Lovecraft. Here is a very good beginner guide, and then you can go off and tell me what you like, and I can point you in the right direction. For someone who loves Lovecraft, it's got tons of gods and monsters. We talked about the Eternal War, which is the beginning of the gods and monsters of the Lovecraftian universe. But there's also a story about the Cats of Ulthar from the Dream Quest of Unknown Kadeth. There's also stories about the Yog-Kosha. There are Lovecraftian horror stories. We even added a new Lovecraftian god to the Lovecraft universe called Brook Through Splip. So that's like very Lovecraftian in its construction of the name. I love that. There's also one about the doom that came to Sarnoth. There's one about the Necronomicon. You may not know that Lovecraft created the Necronomicon. That's him. I thought it was somebody else, but no, he created the Necronomicon. He influenced James Cameron. He influenced Geiger. He influenced, I didn't almost said Shakespeare, but that's not right. Yeah, Stephen King. He influenced
the Shakespeare of our time.
Yes, he is the grandfather of psychological horror. Yeah. So pretty much if you ever watched In the Mouth of Madness, Jacob's Ladder, Event Horizon, Cthulhu is like his creation also, but you probably love Lovecraft even if you have no idea who Lovecraft is, because he touched every horror or psychological writer that has come after him.
And as someone that literally has the Elder Sign like tattooed on the side of his neck, like I'm a fan of this book. So
I'm awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. And my, so I love that. And thank you so much. Cause one of the things I was so worried about was like, will people who love Lovecraft put up with a book that is not all that is not all like Lovecraftian horror? So that mattered a lot to me, and I freaked out until Dirk Manning did the foreword, and he's like, "I liked all of these," and I was like, "Okay." And then I called my other like, "This is good." He's like, "It might alienate some Lovecraft fans, but I think in general." And the best thing that somebody said to me at my table was someone said, "I want to indoctrinate." I think it was their niece. Into liking creepy things. And it's like, and I was like, this is a great primer, but if you like creepy things and cute and creepy things, you'll also appreciate it. The cover is drawn by Aaron Alexievich, who draws Invader Zim, joined Avatar The Last Airbender, did my favorite indie comic, Serenity Rose. And there's also a pin that you can get along with the Kickstarter. And so you can get that by either going to Kickstarter and looking up Cthulhu is Hard to Spell, or you can just go to CthulhuIsHardToSpell.com. And here's the thing. Even if you're on the fence, I recommend going to the page because at the very top of the About section is a 50-page free preview that you can download and read and see if it's something that you like. It contains 11 of the 35 stories in the book. So almost a third of the book. You can tonally tried to capture all of the different things that you can expect in the book. So if you like that, I highly recommend then backing the book. It is all ages appropriate. It is full color. It is a great read, and I am as proud of it as anything I've ever done in my life.
That is awesome. Well, everybody go ahead and get over to Kickstarter today and type in Cthulhu is Hard to Spell. And if you can't spell Cthulhu, I'm sure Google will auto-correct it for you.
It's C-T-H-U-L-H-U. Don't forget the second H. The extra H is for horror.
That's awesome. Well, Russell, thank you so much for your time today, man. I really dig your book. I'm excited to finish it. I just didn't have the time this weekend, but it's phenomenal. It's a lot of fun. And like you said, it's just has so many different varieties of like Cthulhu and the monsters and the mythos that it's a very enjoyable read. So again, thank you so much for your time, Russell. We really appreciate having you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody, it's Clyde from the Old Still Radio Show, and this is why you need to listen to us. Number one, we may not be the biggest podcast out there.
I like being the underdog.
But we are one of the best.
It's magic. Yeah. It really is.
Secondly, we have a southern charm, and we tend to make a lot of sense.
I mean, he can't molest anybody when he's dead. No,
right, right, right.
And I hate to tell you people, we're pretty fucking funny.
Is that hilarious? Yeah.
But let's not forget about our most important part, the weather girl.
Never talked about the weather. You're the weather girl. Nope.
That's sugar tits for those who don't know.
Not hilarious. Welcome. That's going to get you cut.
So if you haven't gotten a feel for it, this is what the show is like, and we invite you guys to come out and check us out. We are the Old Still Radio Show with number two, Preach, Clyde, and Sugar Tits. Find us at www.oldstillradioshow.com or on Facebook at Old Still Radio Show or on Twitter at Old Still Radio. And, of course, wherever you get your podcasts. So, yo, come on out and check out the Old Still Radio Show. We guarantee you're going to have a good time.
Button. Juan counts on his dick. No. Yep.
No, we're past that.
Oh, we're not
you
past
ruined
that.
It.
I did ruin it. I
always
everything.
Have to hit the button twice.
Dude, I thought I hit
Why
it.
Why is that so hard?
It's not so hard. I thought I hit it twice.
It obviously is hard. Always hit it and then look.
I just
don't look away when you hit it.
I get distracted.
Don't
easily.
Get well then you can't be in charge of
I don't
want
to be in charge of the equipment ever, but you're in charge of the important not killing us equipment right now. So
All right, hey everybody, welcome to episode 95 of Thinking
Outside. I think it's
95. 95-ish of Thinking Outside the Long Box. This is our special Colorado Springs Comic-Con coverage. You're going to hear a lot of stuff on the show. You're going to hear a lot of interviews from the floor, some clips from the panels that we were able to record,
right?
Which will be up on our YouTube channel, which you can go to tinyurl.com/TOTLBTube to find all of that stuff.
Correct. Was TOTLB just gone?
No, we aren't allowed to do that until we have 100 YouTube
followers. I know, but couldn't you have just done the tinyurl.totlb? Yeah.
That was already, we had used that for something else some point forever ago.
Okay.
So, because I tried that and it didn't work. So, so tinyurl.com/TOTLB2. Be sure to subscribe there because there is going to be panels. They're probably already up by the time you listen to this
episode. Yeah, hopefully.
But there will be like full recordings of panels that we got, like the Revenge of the Nerds panel and the Dead of the Walking Dead, which I thought that was a funny way to present
that. I don't know where Steve Ogg went. Like, there's a lot of weird little things about this Comic-Con.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But you also hear interviews from the showroom floor with some of the people that we love talking to at all the conventions.
Some of the people that we don't like talking to.
Yeah, Tim.
Fuck that guy.
Oh, man. And of course, you listened the previous special episode, you heard.
It was amazing.
Frankie Cerna's party with Brian O'Halloran. We want to give an extra special shout out to that guy. Like, he has been.
To which guy, Frankie or Brian?
You know what? Fuck it. Both of them. Yeah. Both Frankie Cerna.
I just didn't know who you were talking
about.
Yeah,
both Frankie Cerna for having us, for hosting the party.
In his very small house.
Oh,
wink,
Jesus,
wink.
Right? His small
his
house.
Tiny
is the size
little
of
house.
Three of my house. And, of course, Brian O'Halloran, the one and only clerk now after that story that we heard. But, like, genuinely.
Well, that was a part of the panel, right?
Yeah.
We'll get to there. Sorry.
Genuinely. One of the coolest experiences that we've had at a convention. We really appreciate both you guys. And you know what? We should say it. Smitty, thank you for coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was really cool. Like,
yes.
I'm glad that you made that happen. I know we poke a lot of fun at you. Sometimes you drive us all crazy, but that was really cool, man.
I don't know that we really poke fun at Smitty all that much on the show.
No, I mean, I don't like think in person I poke fun at Smitty.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, I don't remember that.
No, not really.
Fuck you, Smitty.
He's never going
to
hear
it. I had to.
Going
to
hear
it. Well, I'm going to tag him. What do you mean? I'm going to tag him in the post.
Be like, hey, we swore about you.
Yeah.
But, so, that aside, let's come back to the beginning.
Yeah, because Gabe forgot to push
the record button. It's recording now.
Dummy.
Oh, stop being a bitch. Just stop.
Stop fucking things up.
That is impossible.
Well, I'll never stop being a bitch then.
Oh, there you go. All right. So we've come to terms.
Stop asking about it.
Stop asking about it. Oh, man. So overall, Juan.
I hated it. Well, I'm kidding. I did not hate it, actually. It was the most relaxing Comic-Con that we have had in a long time. And that's weird.
I feel like ever.
Maybe ever. I mean, Fort Collins Comic-Con was pretty relaxing. The first year we did things were pretty relaxed. I mean, Denver Comic Con the first year was mostly just at the booth.
Sitting there. Yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't too crazy.
Just because we didn't know. Like, we didn't know what we were doing at all.
That's why this is one that's been, you know, it's been a while since we've kind of just been able to chill out. There is an inordinate amount of traffic.
Do I need to help you with a mount
as
well?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
That sounded a little fumbly. So, going into this convention, you and I both were kind of like, well, it's weird. Like, we don't have the access. Like, there were a lot of weird things about it.
So you can't – that's a very generic term. So when we do Denver Comic Con, we've done it 3 years now as press, I think. 2 years?
2 years.
2 years as press. Almost 4 years. Did we do it our first year?
No,
did we cover it our first year?
We've done it
so
3 years.
So
3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So – the 2 years we've been able to do it as press, they don't help you get interviews. You know, I mean, that's a lie because they helped us get the DMC interview. But I mean, at the beginning, they're not like, here's all the people who are coming and here's all their information. Contact them. You know, you have to do the legwork and you have to go out and you got to do it. And so we did it, and I've said it before, we had the most amount of interviews out of any press that was on the sheet leading into Denver Comic Con. That's access. That's the kind of access we're talking about. We have our own space at Denver Comic Con for press. San Diego Comic Con is a whole nother beast. You have all of the access that you can imagine. You can't keep up with it.
Yeah.
I think that they do that to some, in my opinion, this year was kind of a test for us. You know, the ones that we covered well, maybe we'll get them again. The ones that maybe we're slower at, or, you know, our coverage isn't to their standards or something, maybe they won't invite us next time. But you get a deluge of emails, a shit ton of like, hey, come cover this. Hey, come do this. Hey, talk to us. You know, there is a lot of stuff for San Diego Comic-Con. And so we've always expected that. And so coming into Colorado Springs, I don't know if it's because Altered Reality has some sort of contract. I don't know if it's because, you know, whoever wants to do this just wants to do it their way, which is fine. I get it. This is my baby, so I understand. We were not allowed to contact celebrities or, you know, people who we were allowed to contact, creators, comic book people and shit like that. But we weren't even allowed to email to try and get interviews for these other people. So it was odd. So we came into it thinking, I don't know if we want to do this again. You know what I mean? Because there's not, we're being pressed for Colorado Springs this year didn't mean a lot. And that's not, I don't mean it to sound as crass as it's gonna sound, but it truly doesn't.
It basically was just free entry into the right. show with, you know, nominally VIP access to
right.
get in, you know, an hour.
We didn't
early.
Have to bother with lines or any yeah. of that bullshit.
But in a lot of ways we did, because even like for the panel room, we had to wait in line to get into it.
Right.
In one case, even we were the last two people in line, and they cut off the room and didn't let us in.
Right.
So we were unable to cover that panel.
Right.
Which, for me, makes no kind of sense. You know, we talked about this at length at the show. Like, you bring us in to cover the show, you would think that you would just say, hey, like, there's no more seats, but if you guys want to just stand in the back to make sure that you're still getting coverage of this
right.
thing you want to get coverage of, that we want you to get coverage of, you know, it's a show that's organized and like...
Side note, maybe we should have taken E-470.
Oh, right. It is a show that's organized in like a really weird
right.
sort of way.
Right. And again, or, I don't know
maybe
it...
Weird is the wrong word. Maybe it's just a very different sort of way
right.
than what we're used to, so...
And it's... I don't know if it's because the showrunners come out of the East Coast, and they want to control everything that they cover. Because, like you said, I paid attention a little bit today, and I didn't see many other press. And if I did see them, they weren't doing anything that I could see. And I don't mean that to be like we were the only ones there doing stuff, but because people cover in different ways, they write instead of doing audio or whatever, you know, so be it. But you just like at Denver Comic Con, I saw a lot of people doing interviews, and we could see on the sheet, because there's a sheet there, that people were doing them and they were covering the show, and you could see it happening in front of you because we know what we're looking for. But I didn't see that at this con. Like, I didn't see people being interviewed very much, or you know, there's no way for me to obviously know if there's a sheet for interviews or any of that kind of shit. But it just is weird. Like, I don't know. See, we're saying all the negative, but it actually ended up being
a huge positive.
Really big, you know, difference in what we're normally used to. And it was a good show. But no con is perfect, so.
On the same kind of note, like, I saw one dude with a notebook taking notes that was wearing a press badge. I saw one dude, when we were interviewing somebody, they were standing at the booth next to us interviewing somebody. That's a guy
right.
from a podcast that I know covers Denver Comic Con. And then we saw Smurf. But I mean,
I don't
like
think
a
he
half
was doing
second,
any war. I mean, I don't know.
He was wearing a press badge.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he was doing any kind of work.
And I don't want to say that to throw him under the bus, because I have no idea.
I'm just teasing him. That's just me teasing him. And then, of course, we met the guys from Bitfaced, who were actually, right. pretty good.
But see, they weren't there covering the show either. Like,
they were
in order
moderating.
Correct.
Stuff
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. Yeah. So.
That I could tell.
It was just really an odd.
It's a weird experience.
So.
I don't want a free pass. That's not what I want. I'll buy a $30 pass, you know, because then I can. It's the same shit. We do it because we hope that it's different. We hope that we can, you know, further the show, not our show, their show, but at, you know, give them a little bit, even though maybe there's tens of dozens of people listening to the show, you know, it's there because there's a lot of hate for the show online right now about lines and waiting and all that bullshit. And I'm here to say that it's not. You know, maybe it's, I mean, it's true because the line was fucking gargantuous, but it was a good show. There's a lot of people dogging on it online, and that's not what I'm intending to do. We want to be able to cover it. We want to make sure that, you know, we try when we talk to people to recommend the show. And I don't know that I can do that as a regular person, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, like as a regular attendee, would our experience have been so vastly different? I mean, really, but really the only thing that would have made the experience that much different would have been just the line.
Right.
Like having to wait in the line on Saturday. So let's talk about the space, okay? Because this is like a thing. Like, this is a very odd thing. So it took place in the Chapel Hills Mall in Colorado Springs, Colorado, in one of basically probably like an old, like, JCPenney's or something like that.
Right.
So the whole bottom floor was, you know, which would have been the bottom floor of a showroom floor, was the celebrity kind of area.
Right.
Then there was some stairs that were kind of like creepy stairs, like you would see people running down in like a, you know, an action film or something like that. They were definitely like the back stairs of like a store. They went upstairs, and the upstairs was the showroom floor with the vendors, the artists, comic book writers and artists. And, you know, shirts and all that kind of stuff, right? Then there was an off-site room that was the game room that had some VR games, like kind of a running Dungeons & Dragons game, some people teaching Pokemon, some video games.
Project Nerd was in there,
and Sexy Smart Science or something like that? Smart Sexy Science?
I have no idea.
Yeah, there was another podcast that was in there, but it never looked like they were recording. I don't know. It seemed odd.
I don't know.
And then four doors down in an old Wet Seal store was...
I don't even know what Wet Seal is, by the way.
I think it's like a nail place or something like that. I don't know. We should look it up. We'll definitely look it up. But there was the panel room.
Right.
Which was literally just in like a vacant store.
Right.
Four doors down from the actual place. So you would
you had to exit the con.
To go to the panel room.
Right.
Which also seems odd to me that there's only ever one panel. They definitely have enough people, like celebrities there, that could do panels to
I just don't know why you would do that. You have... In my opinion, you probably could have stacked the panels more. There could have been more panels. Because there was only three, I think, the first day.
There was six or seven the second day.
I think there could have been more, but I think the amount of people that I saw in each panel, I don't know that you could have split that up into two different rooms.
That makes sense.
But I think you probably could have fit one or two or three extra panels on each day.
Yeah. So, but it was odd to have to go out of the con and then, like, down the hall of a mall into, like, the store.
Shopgoers to be like, what the fuck's going on?
Right. There were definitely... Saturday, I was standing... Because, you know, it's a two-story mall, and we were in the upstairs part. Like, Juan had gone to, like, the restroom or something, and I was kind of hanging out.
Oh, you were talking to the blue hair.
Yeah, I was hanging out on the balcony, and this old lady and her husband come up to me and say, what is going on right now? I was like, well, you know, this is Colorado Springs Comic Con. She's like, whoa. She asked me what that was. I explained it to her.
What's a Comic Con?
What's a Comic Con? And I was like, well, crazy old lady that doesn't know anything. Because that's how I talk to people.
Yeah.
It was just...
How dare you?
It's just interesting because you get this interaction with people that, like, just came to the mall to buy shoes versus, like, these people that are here for this convention.
I wonder how many people... I wonder how many people were like, what the fuck's going on? And then were like, fuck it, let's go tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because I think it'd be pretty cool. Like I said, $30. I guess I don't know the cost, but I'm guessing it's around $30.
No, it's like...
It's not that bad.
It was like $30 for like one day passes, yeah. I think.
I mean, even San Diego Comic-Con's not really that expensive as far as tickets go.
It's just so, getting the tickets exactly. to that. That's different.
So, I mean, I bet there were people who were like, is there, what's going on? And then once they find out celebrities and artists, and they're like, oh, fuck, maybe we'll come tomorrow, you know?
Right. I don't know, like, overall, like, the space itself, though, at first it was confusing because we're like, we want to get to this panel, we want to come to this panel. We ask a volunteer, where's the panel room? They're like, I don't know.
Yeah,
then,
it's weird.
Then they went and asked another volunteer, and that volunteer was like, I don't know. I was like, it's going to be hilarious when we have, like, 10 volunteers all following us around trying to figure out where the panel room is. But there was definitely some confusion and disorganization the first day, right. which kind of sucked because it meant that that first panel with Trish Stratus and Amy Dumas, who is known as Lita in WWE,
right.
was very lightly attended.
Well, and it was happening at like right the when the show opened. Yeah. It was weird.
It was... That was...
I didn't mind the showroom. I know there's people, like I said, there's people online whining and crying about it. I didn't mind the configuration. Would it have been nice to have everything contained into one area? Sure. You know, but if you think about it, Denver Comic Con has 17 different rooms that you have to go into depending on what the fuck you want to do.
Right.
So it's not abnormal. It just happens to be in a weird location. It just happens to be in a mall, so that makes it different. But otherwise, every other con I've ever been to, you have to go somewhere to do the shit that you want to do. It's not all in the same area.
Well, I mean, San Diego literally takes place in like 5 different buildings. Like, it's in 4 hotels and the convention center. It's not like any of that is self-contained.
Right.
Like, that's crazy. That's like being in a mall to like the millionth degree.
Right.
So
that doesn't bother me.
Oh, it doesn't.
I don't know why nerds are so fucking particular about shit. Like, it's so weird to me. I just don't get it. We're supposed to be lovable. We're supposed to... It's just so weird to me. Ugh. People have been picked on their whole lives, and they want to turn around and hate on everything. It's so weird to me.
I don't get it. People hate inconvenience.
Just get over it.
No, I'm just saying, like, people... And I don't just mean, like, nerds and nerd culture. I mean, like... Just think about like how irritated people get when they have to like park for 2 minutes to wait for their like chicken sandwich to be done in McDonald's. Like, people just get so frustrated with shit like that, and it's unbelievable.
Get over it.
I try to.
It's dumb. Don't sweat the small bullshit. It's so dumb. Like tangly fucking cords.
Oh no, that's different.
No, it's not. No,
that's different.
It's not different at all.
The tangly.
Don't sweat the small bullshit.
It's not small.
It is small.
When I can't get the thing done.
It's small.
Because it's small. Such a pain in my ass.
That's why you get angry while you're doing it. But if you just don't worry about it, just get through it and you'll be fine. It's fine. I don't care. I have to wait now in line for 2 hours and then have fun for 5 hours? Cool. It is what it is.
It's only frustrating when I'm on a schedule. That's when it's really frustrating. Oh. You just bring it up because you want me to get angry about it.
I'm just saying, we would like for people to not be so angry about things. It's literally like every other fucking comic. It's just in a mall.
I think that's the thing that's weird to me, is people complaining about the line to get into a Comic-Con. It's like, dude, every Comic-Con's like this. And they just... The only thing that really held up the line was a security check.
Right.
And if that security check weren't there, people would be like, it's so weird that there's no security check. Someone could kill us at any moment. Like,
get there earlier.
Yeah.
Jeremiah came at fucking right when the doors opened, maybe 10 minutes late, and he walked right in. I think it was like 5 minutes that he waited in line.
Yeah.
Like, get here early or come 2 hours later or something. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm just so... it bothers me.
And, like, it's not like the line was moving incredibly slowly. It seemed like it was moving fairly quick.
Yeah.
I don't know. But maybe I'm wrong.
It just bothers me. I'm okay waiting. I get it. Like, it's fine. Like I said, if I got there at 9 and I waited until 11 to get in the building, I still have from 11 to 6 or whatever to enjoy the show. Why can't you just fucking do that?
And, like, people were there to, like, go in 2 hours before the close today.
Right. You
know, there were still people that wanted to...
We noticed that last year, too.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It is weird.
It's weird.
Like, just there were people that were excited just to go in for a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, it's worth it. So... cosplay this year.
There's a lot of good cosplay.
There's a lot of good cosplay.
I don't remember there being that much cosplay last year.
I don't either. That's actually what I was going to bring up. I felt like the level of cosplay this year was significantly better than it was last year.
Right.
There was a part of me that was like, should we stay like the extra like hour to see the contest and see like
kids cosplay?
Yeah, well, there was a kids and
the
adults. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to kind of see what was there, but I mean, we're not huge cosplay people. I enjoy it, and I like to take the pictures of it and post it and stuff. But, I mean, I don't really do it, and I'm not really interested in the art of it a lot of the time.
I do it, and I can appreciate it, but I'm just, yeah. It's not that.
And it's way more fun to get pictures of, like, you know, Batman and Punisher, like, walking down the parade and stuff.
Well,
like,
I don't think Batman would walk with Punisher.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't think so. I feel like that's not the type of people that Batman wants to hang out with.
Yeah. Like, maybe he would probably, like,
Punisher's a stone-cold murderer, yeah. Huh.
But he is. So.
No, I enjoyed the show from my perspective. I wish that, and, you know, if somebody complains to Colorado Springs about what we say, whatever, it is what it is.
We haven't said anything bad.
No, I know, that's what I'm saying. It comes off... weird, but it's not meant to be bad. I wish that they could be. It's to my overall argument that I don't understand why you give people press badges at any con if you don't let them cover the show. Yeah. That's what I don't understand that. Like, I don't have to get in front of the ADA and the people who paid for VIP tickets. You know, that's fine. Yeah. Denver Comic Con has a line for press. And then once they've reached the 10 or 15 press maximum, you have to get into the regular line. I get that. I understand that because that gives you the opportunity because you don't want 30 or 40 press taking up 75% of the room. You know,
right.
That's why they do that. But there were not that many press people here.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody doing the stuff that we were doing.
No, it was the volunteers. It was the Colorado Springs volunteer people doing it.
Right.
They were taking pictures and they were doing all of the stuff, but there weren't that many in the panels. I don't think I saw one other person as a press. That
I
was
saw one
covering
and it was
the show.
The dude, like I said, that had a notebook. He sat down, he was taking notes and stuff like that, and then that was it. So
I don't know. It's just weird to me.
It is weird.
But again, not having the ability to contact people for interviews gave us a unique opportunity to. Do panels, to do other things that we don't ever do at Comic-Cons. So it ended up being a really fun, kind of relaxed show.
Yeah, because we went into panels. We would record them, take pictures.
Right.
I think you or I asked a question in every single panel that
just,
we sat in.
Yeah, I didn't ask a question in the first two, but I tried.
No, I mean like one of us.
Yeah.
I mean, and so it ended up being
I get
like,
nervous.
That's okay.
I don't know why. Too. I get nervous.
But it ended up being really, really fun. So let's go. Let's do a rundown.
Okay.
And maybe as you...
Like The Rock? That rundown?
No. Like, let's do a rundown of what lightning? We did. And then you can put some clips as we're going down.
All right.
So coming up, you'll hear a few clips as we talk about these different things. So first panel we attended, Team Bestie. Hashtag yes. Team Bestie.
I don't know that I recorded that one, though.
I don't think you did, but we have. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
So Trish Stratus, Amy Dumas, aka Lita.
Yes.
Just talking about wrestling in general. It was pretty cool. It's interesting to hear wrestlers talk about like the business and their craft,
right?
And, like just kind of what they do,
right? Is that really why we were going?
Very possible. Ugh. Like two cars pulled over on the other road. But it was fun to hear that the announcement that Trish Stratus is going to fight Alexa Bliss at Evolution, that Trish learned that at you know, at that episode of Raw, like right. that, you know, the way she put it is that ideas had been thrown around, but nothing had been finalized. And then it was like, oh, yeah, we'll finalize it right now.
She's like, they gave me 3 or 4 different things that I might do. And then they didn't tell me for sure. And then it just happened on TV.
Yeah. And there were some good stories about, you know, what it was like to, you know, wrestle in the past.
Right.
And like some of the things that they did.
I saw that announcement and I immediately was thinking to myself, like, how the fuck did that happen? So I went back and I couldn't find any. For me, this is a really weird age in wrestling. There doesn't have to be a lot of like, I hate her because of this, or I hate you because of this, and then we're going to wrestle. Like, things just happen. It's just weird. That's really odd to me.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily need a storyline for a match. They can just say, this is the match.
It's so weird.
It's the big match we want
to
have.
But it's so weird to me. Like, I went back and I was like, oh, fuck, I wonder if something happened to make that happen, to necessitate that. But I didn't find anything. There was no, like, yeah, they were even like a stupid, simple Twitter beef or some bullshit like that. You know, nothing happened at all. It was just odd. But then I'll be honest with you. When I heard of a pay-per-view that was purely women wrestlers, I was not excited. That does not excite me at all. You know, I like wrestling and I like women's wrestling, but there's not enough good women's wrestling in that promotion to necessitate one full, because you wouldn't see Trish Stratus or Lita, you wouldn't see these other people needing to come on to the show in order to try to sell the show. And that bothers me. You know what I mean? There's good wrestling and there's good women wrestlers and they deserve their own show. I just don't think that right now is a good time for it.
I don't think it's the right move yet, because like you, I don't think they have a big enough body of female wrestlers to pull it off in a way that people will. You should have women wrestlers stacked to the gills to the point that no matter what you do, it's the only thing people can talk about the day afterwards.
Right.
You know, that they're just so, like, gobsmacked with how fucking amazing the event was, that they're clamoring for next year's event. And I just don't think that's going to happen.
The beautiful thing about the Attitude Era and post-Attitude Era 3 or 4 years was that you could always count on a Raw that had Lita or Trish Stratus or Victoria or Jacqueline or fucking a bevy of fucking women wrestlers that were badass. That they could put on a 10 or 15 or 20 minute match and it was believable, it was real. They could wrestle with the dudes, and you know, while the guys weren't necessarily punching the women in the face or anything, it was how they did it was believable. And they weeded it out in order to hire female, you know, bikini models and shit that didn't know how to wrestle, and I think it killed wrestling. It killed women's wrestling.
Absolutely. And now that they're rebuilding it, I feel like they're just jumping the gun on Evolution.
I think what would be cool and what you could do is you got a 3 or 4 hour show, do half the first half male and then the first half female. Let the ladies end the show.
Right.
You know, that's okay. Then you only have to rely on an hour, hour and a half of product that you have to put out there, which is easy.
Right. It's basically the length of an episode of SmackDown.
Right.
So. But anyway, going back to the panel, it was fun to watch them interact with each other. They were hilarious. Like, they were funny. They were like,
it's because they're real life best friends.
Yeah, and it's awesome to watch them just interact with each other and interact with the fans. You know, there was a lot of people there that had some cool questions and just good things to talk with them about.
Something like that. Yeah, I don't know.
Almost English words.
Was it Latin?
I don't know.
Oh, all right.
It was
a good panel. The guy that was in the front, this is going to sound wrong because I don't know if he has special needs or not, but it kind of sounded like it. And they were giving him extra attention, which made me led me to believe that they knew he might.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how the fuck we got on the topic in that panel about a suggestion box.
Well, she had said that, you know, we've always wanted to do a suggestion box so that people can say, what do you want to see us do in wrestling? And so he made them a suggestion
box. They're like, who wants to do it? And, you know, they pitched it to him. And we were, the next day we went, because we were good, I was going to get my Rey Mysterio mask signed. And I was like, holy shit, he actually did it. It was cool.
It was really cool. So it was a good panel. Like, yeah, I enjoyed it, had a lot of fun. So
yeah, the dog magically appeared out of Lita's backpack.
Lita's dog is a very small dog because he fits in a backpack, and that's cute.
And then I got a signature from each of them. They spoke to us for a few minutes, each of them. It was pretty cool.
It was.
They were nice.
Lita has a new show.
UFO show, I think it's called.
UFO show, I think.
I don't know the channel.
Yeah, we'll have to look that up.
That I don't know, yeah.
Maybe we can...
I'll plug it here.
Maybe we can send her a little thing that says, yeah, come talk to us about your alien show.
Well, you'll hear the trailer to that here. If there's a trailer, I don't even know if there is a trailer, but you can hear it. You can
we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
something will happen right
now.
Now.
Register and watch at AsaiTV.com. Also available on Roku.
So the next panel was basically the cult movies
panel.
It's kind of the way it was branded, but the panelists
cult classics.
Yeah, cult classics. The panelists were Shannon Elizabeth from American Pie and Silent Bob Strike Back, and Brian O'Halloran from Clerks and
Clerks 2. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
I know, but it's just funny to say Clerks and Clerks 2.
Off topic. He briefly spoke about doing behind the scenes stuff. So now I'm interested, just mostly because I've never done it, but now I'm interested in looking up to see what he's produced or directed and all that kind of stuff. So that's pretty cool.
He was talking to us. You heard it in the previous episode when he was plugging stuff about Jason Mewes' first directorial movie and stuff like that.
Talked about that on Jay and Silent Bob Get Old.
Yeah, just there's some really interesting stuff out there that he's working on. But so this was, again, another panel. Shannon Elizabeth, you know, comes out. Everybody hoots and hollers. Brian O'Halloran came out first.
With a boombox.
With a boombox playing some awesome... I think it was an MC Chris song.
I don't know what he was playing.
I think it was MC Chris song.
It was just loud.
Trying to get the whole crowd hyped.
Right.
And then he said, you guys don't give a shit about me. Let's bring out Shannon Elizabeth. And, you know, everybody cheered for her, too. And
was our man Bitface on this one?
Yeah, I think so.
Did Eric do this one?
I think so.
Yeah, he did, because he did him back-to-back.
That's right.
I think
right.
he did him back-to-back. So Eric Hollis. From Bitface.
From Bitface, yeah. Who we will probably be doing something together with them very soon.
We'll see.
Oh, man. We'll do something. We'll definitely do something together, guys. Oh, fuck off. Right now, I hope he's, like, binge listening to our show and, like...
Oh, I hope not.
Regretting the decision that... Oh, man, those guys are so...
That was a decision that he would regret.
That's a lot of audio.
Oh, God. What is... I don't even know the math. 100 episodes times 3... Wow, that's okay, that's pretty easy. That's pretty fucking easy to do. Now that I say it out loud...
It's literally, like, 300 hours.
Well, okay. How many days is that?
A lot of days.
Whew. I don't know how to do math. I'm
Several.
Sorry.
It's because you count on your dick.
Yeah, exactly.
One?
One?
So, anyway, this panel was hilarious.
Yes.
Because
Brian is hilarious.
He is. He is maybe one of the most, like, quick-witted human beings I think I've ever seen on stage.
So, I don't know if you heard Eric or not, but he had said that he spoke with Brian because he gets like 5 minutes or so before they actually come out.
Just kind of talk.
Yeah. So Brian had told him that he's at his funniest and the best when he's talking to the audience. So Brian did, not Brian, Eric did, I think if I remember right, he did like one or two questions, and then he started asking, you know, the audience to ask questions. So that's kind of how it came about, that it just kind of went off.
Crazy. Yeah. Like completely crazy.
I feel like these were, I feel like almost all of these panels were Q&As. Like, that's just what it was.
Right.
You didn't, like, when you do panels at Denver Comic Con, as much as you'd like people to ask questions, I don't think you're going to get that very often. I don't know why, but I definitely think that they're two different audiences, because these people were fucking ready with questions, like, for every panel we did.
Well, not so much the Stefan Kepzitsu.
Well, there was a lot of people asking him to do things.
But they were insane questions. Like, it was all insane
but
shit.
People,
we'll get to there.
But
we'll
people
get to there.
Were ready.
Yeah. This is, okay, valid.
The Ron Mars one. We keep calling it the Ron Mars one. It was a Green Lantern
panel. It was a Green Lantern one. It's
that
just
one was...
Ron Mars is a verbose man.
Right. Which worked.
Good.
It
yeah.
worked in this panel because none of the other guys really wanted to talk all that much. So.
Literally, Mike Grell sat and drew for like the whole panel.
And I don't know who. Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, go back.
Go back. Brian O'Halloran.
So, probably the key moment that like solidified that this was going to be like the hilarious panel of the. Of,
this was like the Brian O'Halloran fucking experience for us this weekend.
It really was. This guy stands up and says, "It's so amazing to be standing here in front of a perfect 10. Obviously referring to Shannon Elizabeth. And without a single...
I think the crowd booed him.
Without a single hesitation, Brian O'Halloran says to him, "But what do you guys think of Shannon?" Like, it was just... It was so... Like, on the nose and, like, perfect. That guy was a little creepy.
Side note, that's... Don't... Yeah, that's weird.
Don't
like,
say something like that to
weird.
Somebody. Like, all they're going to do is watch out for you
yeah.
and not talk to you the rest of the time
thank
you're
you.
There.
Like, what the fuck?
But it was an interesting... Yeah, it was...
I feel like Shannon has not been in the eye. I mean, not that this was a huge con or anything, but I feel like she has not done this for a while. And so she seemed really shy, and Brian's ability to take control without coming off like a douche was good for
was
this
really
panel.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though Eric was there moderating it, Brian was definitely moderating.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. But it was good because they ended up actually kind of giving a little bit of like a class on if you want to get into acting, take acting lessons. You know, go out of your way to, like, learn the craft of acting. Go to film festivals, like, independent film festivals, and say, "I'm trying to learn how to do this. Can I work with you?" Not even, can I be an actor, but can I work with you on whatever project you're working on so that I can learn how to do things? Like, take care of the crew. Like, you know, he even said, if you want a crew to be there to diligently work for you and stay late, figure out a way to feed them a good meal every day, and it'll make them happy. And if you can make the crew happy, you can make everybody happy. You know, that kind of thing is not something that you hear, like, really ever. And in that panel situation, they were able to talk about these are the ways that you can, like, do work in the movie industry if that's what you really want to do. And he was very clear. Don't think you're going to become a star. Like, just if you want to do the work, do the work. But if you're not willing to do the work, just don't worry about it. Go watch movies instead
right.
of doing movies. And that was a good thing to hear. Like, it was a cool thing to experience actors talking about this is the reality of, like, the job that we do. And then, of course, the panel transitioned into Shannon Elizabeth's charity, because that's what she's passionate about now.
Right.
Like, the being in American Pie, being in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, you know, doing all of those things, it's now a gateway for her to get public, you know, in front of the public so that she can talk about her charity.
Right.
So... She has a charity, and the name is transitioning, but it was called Animal Avengers. It started out as a dog and cat rescue in Los Angeles. And then she started learning more and more about a lot of the problems that are going on with poaching in Africa and things
right.
like that. And so now Animal Avengers is transitioning into something called the Shannon Elizabeth Foundation. She went out of her way to move to South Africa And the Shannon Elizabeth Foundation sounds less like a charity and more like a lobbying organization at this point, where they're literally going in front of like politicians and trying to like help legislation get passed like in South Africa to help like curb the poaching problem that's there. I mean, it's a real thing that she's really passionate about, that's doing work that's bigger and more significant than just, you know, being in a movie where a dude fucks a pie.
Right.
You know, and that's an amazing thing. And her passion for it comes through in like a really amazing way. And, you know, the reasons she does it is because she's vegan. She believes in like that sort of thing. And though I am not, like, I can appreciate like what she's trying to do. And
I can appreciate not killing an animal just to take its horns.
Exactly.
I'm fine with that.
I'm 100% fine with that. But in the long run, this you know, situation at the convention, it gives her an opportunity.
Right, right.
You can find it at animalavengers.com or ShannonElizabethFoundation.com. They're
selling beads. You got your beads.
Yeah, I
don't know if you opened them at all.
Well, I have the package. I'm going to...
They're not beads. Why? I don't know why I
they're
said
bracelets.
That. They're bracelets. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
that are made by...
Beads just sounds like you just had a handful of beads.
They're beaded bracelets made by women that live in the townships in South
Correct.
Africa. So, you know,
and I think she said 100% of those sales will go to the charity,
exactly.
Which is pretty cool.
She talked a little bit about selling some of her stuff, like from Dancing with the
yes.
Stars, and
Brian O'Halloran was trying to get her to
sell
not
the clothes
necessarily
she was wearing
strip.
Right there.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would say not necessarily take her clothes off, but. It's pretty cool. I mean, it sounds like even in the future, because she's got a lot of clothing and stuff that she's going to be selling. There's a lot of I can understand. I'm not a big fan of like I wore this on blah blah blah. It's my underwear. You know, I'm gonna buy it from the actress. You know what I mean? Not that she's selling underwear. I'm just saying.
The way
like,
you said that
not,
was fucking creepy.
No,
as fuck.
I'm just not a big.
Shannon Elizabeth's underwear.
I'm just not a big apparel like guy. That
but the way
it's not a big. That's the, but I'm saying that people will buy it.
And the way Brian presented it made sense.
Right.
It's like a game worn jersey,
right?
Except for it's a movie worn shirt,
right?
You know, same difference. You can take here's a screen cap of the scene in the movie where I wore this shirt, and here's the shirt.
Right.
Like, she talked about having a leotard from when she was a little kid.
Oh, when she was a baby, she said.
That her mom had a picture of her wearing
yeah.
it, and so she could sell it and say, hey, this was me as a little kid and stuff. But she talked about how she's already sold all of her jewelry. Like
right.
Anything that has like immediate value, she sold to move to South Africa to run this charity. So
it's insane. It's good for her.
It's cool. Yeah,
I wouldn't want to live in South Africa, but good for her.
I would not. So I don't think we have any clip from that, but...
I don't remember. I don't remember when exactly I broke out the... Oh, no,
no
I didn't
the GoPro
for the...
was day two.
That, yeah, yeah, you're right, you're right.
But I think
you
may have filmed a little bit of that particular panel on your phone.
No me acuerdo.
No?
Okay. I don't remember.
We'll figure it out. If not, here's a clip from Clerks of Brian O'Halloran being a...
So, in that negotiation, they lowballed what the salary went in, especially to Jeff. And me and Jeff, we were kind of insulted, but at the same time, we were like, well, we have a negotiating room, and while we were on the bridge negotiation, he's like, fuck this bridge and burn the whole fucker down, and he let off this email, a couple of emails to Kevin, and it just kind of went a little late, but it is what it is.
Next panel? Are we just going panel by panel? Is that how this is happening?
I don't know. Does that? I might as well.
Yeah, fuck. I don't know what the next panel was, though.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, yeah, I'm out. That was day two.
Yeah, so day two. Maybe we only do like, well, I don't know.
I don't care. Just fucking do it. We got an hour to go still.
Hour and 9 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Hour and 9 minutes.
Yes, sir.
That'll make this 2 hours of recording.
That's all right. Fuck
no,
it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's good. So, Revenge of the Nerds. It was like literally...
I can't do that. That's hard.
It is hard. He said it's hard. He said that it was difficult to learn and that he had to learn it from somebody else.
Fucking might pass out.
Yeah, I would pass out. This was like basically the whole fucking cast of Revenge of the Nerds.
He's seven. Seven. It
yeah.
was seven, right? Yeah.
Yeah, seven. And so... We got to talk about the most amazing part of this panel. So I feel like we've become a little bit of friends with Eric.
We met these guys. We haven't told anybody about them or anything.
You do it.
So I don't even know how. Where did we? I think we were just waiting outside to get into the panel, and we started talking.
He was standing outside, and I had asked him because he had a press badge. I was like, "Hey, do you know if we can go in early?" Right? Because I was trying to figure it out.
Oh, that's right. And then we got yelled at because of him, fucking Eric.
And he said, "I don't know that you guys can go in early, but I'm going to go in early because I'm moderating this panel." And he said, "I've never moderated a panel before." And this is before the Trish and Lita one. He goes, "I hope you have a lot of questions because I literally just started learning about wrestling last week." I was like, "Oh," and he did the big Divas thing too. I forgot about that. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that was funny.
But, oh man, he's full of botches again. But anyway,
funny botches though,
yeah,
not fucked
botches. So he basically was like, "I'm going to rely on you guys to like do this panel because I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about." I was like, "Yeah, just wing it, dude. Like, have one or two questions ready and then kick it to the."
He had great charisma.
He did great.
So
yeah.
I didn't. Again, at Denver Comic Con, we don't do panels unless you're doing them, and so I don't watch a lot of moderators do their thing. But he was really good. Like, he's for somebody who's never done it before. He was really good. He's natural. Like, he could come out and liven up the crowd without fucking yelling at them on the same fucking line every fucking panel. Anyways. But he was really good. He was charismatic. He didn't seem nervous.
Until
the aforementioned story we're going to tell.
Yeah. don't spoil it.
But he was good. He was really good. So, good for him.
Of the four or five moderators that I saw this weekend, he was by far the best one. Like, the
Project Nerd guy seemed pretty nervous.
He was, but he did okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think anybody did that.
The guy that was dressed as Loki did good, but it was very distracting that he was dressed as Loki. It was very difficult to pay attention to anything else.
Anyways,
but,
so he's moderating the panel. He told us where he was from, Bitface podcast. It's a gaming podcast.
Yes.
So, I mean, cool. Go listen to them if you're into games. I don't know any other gaming podcast, so I don't feel bad.
Yeah,
mentioning any other friends' games podcasts
or some bullshit.
Just
okay, gamers, because I know they need to get dropped here for Tim.
There you
go. Yeah.
For Tim? Who's Tim? Our Tim?
Yeah.
Is he on another podcast?
He's not on another podcast, but he's really good friends with
him.
He went to Ohio.
I mean, he's on our podcast, but he's not really on our podcast.
No, he is really on our podcast. When he went to Ohio, that's who he stayed with. Was the guys from Just Okay Gaming.
Ah, okay, cool. So, yeah, go. Yeah. If you're into games, go check them out.
Those two podcasts. Bitface and Just Okay.
Yeah.
If you're into games, don't check out any other podcasts.
No, fuck every other podcast.
Fuck all other game podcasts. You know what? Fuck video games.
Wow.
Oh, no, I like video games. Never mind.
Oh, okay.
So, imagine if you will.
Revenge of the Nerds.
There's a riser. And on that riser.
So like a stage.
Yeah, a little stage. And on that stage, there is a table. Okay? And at this table,
little man,
we have to fit 8 chairs. Okay, 7 for the cast of Revenge of the Nerds, plus 1 on the very edge for Eric. Okay,
so there's actually 5 on the table,
right?
There
and
was 2 behind.
Back. Yeah, but
still, it was small.
A lot of people, like there's a lot of people on a stage that is clearly designed for like 4 fucking people. Everybody gets on stage. Eric sits down. He's kind of going into his... He had a whole intro. He told me this is the only one that he had an intro written for that he was, like, super excited about. He starts saying his intro, and then all of a sudden you just see him sliding, like, just kind of, like, sideways.
I didn't see it,
I watched it. I got pictures of it and everything. He starts tipping over and just disappears under the table off the edge of the stage. He hits the speaker, which begins wobbling back and forth.
And it would look like a heavy speaker.
For 2 seconds, I was like, this is only funny if that shit does not fall over on this guy that is now like kind of our buddy, you know? Because if it kills that dude, we won't be able to work with this podcast. But like, all the people in Revenge of the Nerds, they jump up. They're like, "Oh my God, are you okay? Are you all right?" And he like does the total pop up. "I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm okay." Like he could not. have more perfectly encapsulated what it means to be a nerd than that very moment of just tipping himself over and like making an ass of himself in front of his
heroes. Beautiful.
It was amazing.
It was beautiful.
Like, it
so I
brought me to tears.
I recorded this one. I did record. Yes. This was the first one I recorded. And for some reason, I looked to my right. I don't know what was happening over there. And I hear a commotion. What have you. And I peer to my left. And everybody's gone. And I was like, what the fuck happened? And everybody's like, holy shit, oh my God, oh my God. And I'm like, did he pass out?
I love that you thought maybe he was so excited.
He was so excited.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
Oh, God. the best part is that, like, it became an ongoing joke through, like, the rest of the convention. Like, he brought it up every single panel that he moderated.
Well, yeah, I yelled at him and asked if his chair was super glued to the stage at this point.
Oh, man.
It was funny. It was funny.
It was unbelievable. The fact that he was...
Because he's okay.
Yeah, the fact that he was okay makes it funny. If he would have gotten really hurt, we would all felt bad, but...
And then laughed.
The best part is that Donald Gibb, the guy that plays Ogre... was the first person over to the edge of the stage.
Right.
So here's this dude who, like, whose persona
he's
in the
big
movie
too.
He is big, but his persona in the movie is, oh fuck you nerds, I'll fucking kill you. Leaning over the stage, dude, are you all right? Like, you know, trying to help this guy up. You know, it was amazing. It was just genuinely one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
So I haven't seen this movie in quite a long time. It's been a long time since I've seen this movie. And I remember Ogre being like a mean guy, like somebody who didn't like nerds.
Right.
The way he framed it, though, the way he framed it in the panel was that he didn't necessarily not like nerds as much as he wanted the character to just not understand anything.
He was confused. So,
right.
Yeah.
So that's why in the second one he said it was so easy for him to just be on their team.
Yes.
Because then he understood it. So that took away the fact that he was bully and more that he just didn't know. You know, he was a nerd in the sense that he was not good with interactions and shit. You know what I mean?
Isn't that the reality, though, that, like, most of the time, bullies, especially back in the day, they made fun of what you were doing because you were having fun doing something they just didn't fucking understand.
Right, right.
Like, I remember people picking on me because I like metal and because I like Dungeons & Dragons.
I still pick on you for that.
I know, but it's just, why do you not like metal? You don't understand it. Like, you don't get the appeal of it, and that's totally fucking fine. It's just that we live in a society now where if you don't understand the appeal of it, you think to yourself, yeah, what a teach his own. Who
right,
gives a
right,
fuck?
Right.
But back then it was like, I don't understand that thing you like, so fuck you. I'm giving you a wedgie and a swirly, and then I'm going to kick you in the dick and leave you in the park. So, I mean.
I feel like that happened to you.
It, yeah. So Revenge of the Nerds was like this movie, and we talked about this a little bit, that in a lot of ways, Clerks was this movie for you, where you saw these like people that were like kind of dorky, geeky people, and you're like, oh, I relate to that. Well, Revenge of the Nerds, it for me, it was kind of that movie where I saw these people that were kind of gross. Like, I wasn't a very clean kid when I was younger because I wasn't, like, you know, very well supervised by my parents, you know. I was into stuff that other people weren't into, so I got made fun of a lot. But in this movie, the nerds win.
Right.
And that was something that was cool to me, where I was like, yeah, the things I know about, those skills do have value. Like, I can be the cool one.
Heart
I can
stop.
Be the one that wins. You know, and that was an important thing. And that love of that, you know, kind of mentality came through in this panel, like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
There was a lady that raised her hand and was like, my mom and I watch this movie like every month. You know, like once a month we sit down, we watch Revenge of the Nerds.
Which is weird, by the
way. Yeah, it is a little weird. But
I love traditions, but it's just weird.
I mean, but everybody has their own.
I don't have
traditions.
That shit.
Dude, you do. You
no,
go. You
I don't know.
You have weird
no,
things.
No, Speedy.
Everybody has weird things. You do have a weird tradition. You sit down in a room with fucking 3 to 4 assholes.
That's every not weird.
Other week.
That's not weird.
That's pretty weird. It's not weird.
There's a lot of us who do that. That makes it not weird. That makes it normal.
I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of people that watch Revenge of the Nerds once
a month. I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure you're right. But I'm not going to...
It's weird in the sense that...
I'm not going to nerd shame that lady, man.
I love it. I hope she loves it. I'm saying it's so weird to be so regimented that you're like, oh, fuck, it's the 30th. We haven't watched Revenge of the Nerds yet.
We better watch it. No, but she like got emotional because...
She did.
Here's these people.
These are her heroes.
You know, and it was, oh man, am I getting emotional?
You're
right
such
now?
A bitch.
God damn it. I make fun of you for being a bitch, and then I tear up because somebody else teared up. Jesus. Oh, I have got to stop taking
the
day. oh, shit. Anyway, so their panel was fucking phenomenal.
It was funny.
You can tell that the friendship that they developed making this ridiculous fucking movie has literally lasted their whole lives. There was nobody that felt like, oh, I don't want to be here. They all wanted to be there. They all wanted to hang out with each other. They were all having fun from beginning to end of the panel. Like, one of the other dudes that was volunteering as a cameraman, I leaned over to him at one point and said, dude, this is by far the most photogenic group of people because they were constantly making faces. They were constantly laughing. They were constantly like wildly gesticulating. And just, it was so cool to see a group of people that after such a long time were still really, really good friends.
And they had mentioned that. They had mentioned the fact that being on set was easy because they were all friends. Nobody had their egos and nobody, you know, everybody shot with each other and all that stuff. And that's the biggest reason why they clicked so well is because they were with their friends.
Talk a little bit more about what you felt about Revenge of the Nerds. Like, coming out of it, like, what does... So
it was funny. Again, I haven't seen the movie in forever, so...
Here's one thing that the panel did for me.
We fucking hit Rockies.
Yeah. Here's one thing the panel did for me. It made me want to watch Revenge of the Nerds again. Like, I haven't seen it in such a long time, and it is...
It won't hold up for me.
It probably won't hold up for me either, but I want to watch it because it's super funny. Probably my favorite story was finding out that that the belch noise that came out of Booger when he wins the belching contest is actually a combination of a human belching and a camel having an orgasm. Thought that was like one of the better lines in there. So, but yeah, absolutely fun. Really good group of people. Eric made the panel very special.
Yeah, he did.
Just by falling over like...
Got a special concussion.
A special one. Like, basically just by being himself, and it was pretty fun. So, all right. You'll probably hear a little clip from...
Between partying, we would shoot.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And we would go back after shooting either at Old Tucson, where we did all the interior stuff, and the university, where we did other stuff... And, you know, they were long days and hot days. It was in, you know, Arizona. And we would, you know, just need to blow off a little steam by the end of the day. And we did that.
We blew off some steam.
Well, that was very interesting what that guy that was in that one thing just said right there.
Yeah.
Wise guy. Next up, we did...
That might be trademarked.
Probably, yeah.
Trademarked or copywritten? I think it's trademarked.
No, I think it's copywritten because it would be lines from a script.
Yeah, you're right.
Also, it might be in the public domain. I think The Three Stooges is in the public domain.
Maybe.
Because it is very fucking... next, we have the Green Lantern panel. This was probably the most sparsely attended panel that we were at.
Yes, because it had to do with comic books.
Correct, which is... partially depressing to me because we're all there because of media that is based on comic books.
Right.
And it's for me, and like, I know this is not true for anybody, and I'm not upset about it anymore. Like, I've gotten past that. But for me, I feel like if you want to really get to the heart of what it is that you love. If you love Green Arrow, the TV show, you should go read the comic book, because Longbow Hunters by Mike Grell is fucking amazing. It's a ton of fun to read. It's a really cool story, and it'll give you insight into the direction that the character came from and is going. Does that kind of make sense?
Sure.
And so when I see like these groups of guys that have created like these characters in these movie or these comics that have been turned into television and movies and stuff, what they have to say is important to me, like, because I want to know more about the things that they create. And unfortunately, Green Lantern gets this bad rap because of the fucking god awful movie that they made out of it, which sucks because it has so much potential, but you know, it is what it is. So, this had Ron Mars, Mike Grell, Daryl,
Blanks?
Yeah, Daryl Banks.
Banks.
And two other, like, people whose names are... Insert names here.
I have no idea.
I know. I'll look it up. Oh, goddamn Colorado Springs Comic Con, your app. And the thing is back there. We'll put it in the notes.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm drawing a blank, and all the access to the information that I need is either all the way in the back of the car or on an app that's... works-ish. But this panel ended up largely being about Daryl Banks and Ron Mars and their time on Green Lantern, where... two very pivotal things happened, where Hal Jordan became a mass murderer and Kyle Rayner took over as Green Lantern, which is kind of like the everyman's Green Lantern. And then also he talked pretty extensively about the trope of girlfriend in the refrigerator, like woman in the freezer kind of thing, where, you know, this idea that a female character is only introduced into a story to murder her so that the male character has a motivation.
Right.
Which some people really dislike. You know, people indicate that it's like a form of like subtle misogyny and that sort of thing, which in a lot of ways it is. But Ron talked very extensively about his opinions on it and why he used it and how, because at the time so many comic book readers were male and there was such a low female readership, it was hard to use male death in comics to motivate readers' emotional responses. It was interesting. It was a good talk. There was a lot of really cool information about, you know, the beginnings of Green Lantern and like Green Lantern through the years. And honestly, if you're a big Green Lantern fan, this is something that you would have really, really enjoyed, and it's definitely worth a listen. You can go to our YouTube page at tinyurl.com/TOTLBTube. The panel will be up there. It'll probably just be labeled Green Lantern Panel, Colorado Springs Comic Con 2018. You know, it's very interesting. Like, it's an engaging talk. It's a lot of Ron Mars talking, who you will hear later in the episode, like in an interview. He talks about some of the same stuff, but we dive a little deeper into like Witchblade and Silver Surfer too. But there's a lot of history there. There's a lot of comic book information in that panel that for me personally is really fascinating and really important. Like, when you forget where you're coming from, when you forget the past, I think sometimes it's easy to lose sight of like what you could be doing. You know, Green Lantern could be this great TV show or this great movie, but because that one time they made a bad movie, nobody wants to look at that source material anymore. Nobody wants to go back and say, well, what did they originally do? Mike Grell talked about how inspiring Denny O'Neill's Green Lantern Green Arrow run is, and how he wanted to be involved in Green Lantern because of those books. And with an amazing actor like Stephen Amell and then somebody else playing Green Lantern, you could make an amazing Green Lantern Green Arrow, you know, book or movie nowadays. And that would be really cool. Or a series. Yeah. It's interesting. It's engaging, and it's one of the things that I really like about conventions is being able to talk to or listen to comic book artists and creators talk about comic books. Like, it's, you know, there probably was a lot of opportunity for that this weekend that we just kind of bypassed in favor of kind of this little bit more laid back version, talking to more of our friends and stuff like that. But this was a really good panel that I really enjoyed.
Are you done? Jesus. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah, no.
So we spoke about this a little bit the day of, I think.
Yes.
Because it was there, you know, there, though I've not read a ton of Green Lantern, I've read some Mike Grell, you know, I've read some Longbow Hunter. Oh shit, I should have went the express lane. Damn it.
No, that's the RTD.
Oh, okay, good. Woof.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I've read some of those things because I like comic books. It's something that I got into before I really got into anything else. Because now I would consider myself more of an entertainment guy. You know, I'm more
an
of
entertainment
a well,
guy.
Because
no, it's just funny to say it that way. I'm not goofing on you.
I like movies and I like, you know, TV shows, and that's more. I haven't had time. To read a comic book in forever. I read, right. You know, a couple, three, four the other day, but I just don't have time anymore because I want to catch up with other things. The problem that I saw or that I think is happening is that not everybody knows that Green Lantern was a comic book. You know what I mean? Not everybody knows that Green Arrow was a comic book. Because it catches, you know what I mean? I'm guessing the first season or two of Green Arrow was like, yes, we're getting a Green Arrow. He was a comic book character. It's going to be amazing. But then it caught, and people were watching because of Stephen Amell or because the show was good. You know what I mean? They weren't watching because they knew the source material. They knew that it came from somewhere. For me personally, I think the duty sometimes falls on the shoulders of the people creating the shows and creating and acting in them and doing those things. You know, it's funny because we'll talk about the panel a little bit later. Yeah. Well, that one and the Walking Dead one, where you had asked about the comic books, and even the creators of the show don't tell it from the panel, they don't tell the actors to go look at the source material. So, you know, it sounded like Olivia's the actress. I can't remember her name. She'd read all of them because she was a Walking Dead fan. But even maybe some of them don't know that there is source material. You know what I mean? It's a comic book, but it's The Walking Dead, and that's what matters. You know what I mean? Because it's been on for 7-8 years or whatever it's been on now. And that's the thing is, what's happening, I feel like, is that Marvel and DC, for a smaller extent, because their movies aren't that great, they're pushing away from that. Because they're not pushing towards it. Because they're not actively saying Batman has 50 fucking years of material for you to go read. You know what I mean? Go right. Do that. You know, you don't get those people actively telling you to go read a book. And that goes in general, I'm guessing. You know, I think now, honestly, there's way more people reading books than there used to be, honestly, because there's way more ability to do so. But there's not people out there saying, go pick up a book. Go do that.
Right. It becomes a failing of the other media outlets that are using this source material to not say, go do this, go read this book, go enjoy this thing, because if you like our TV show, you're going to fucking love what it's based on.
Right.
Because a TV show, an hour-long TV show, can only cover so much, especially when the backlog of fucking material is, like you said, like a Batman that goes back 50 years. There's literally going to be, like, in a few months, like, I think about, like, 9 or 10 months, 1,000 issues of Detective Comics, and not as many, but a very similar amount of Batman, plus all the other Batman
Justice
shit.
League.
Yeah. Yes. It's just, it's unbelievable, like, how much is out there that people, they may, like, culturally know about it. Yeah, there's Batman comic books. But they don't know. They haven't read it. They don't know the plot line where the guy is writing a Batman comic book inside of Batman. You know, there's so many cool, ridiculous stories like that, you know.
But let's take Batman and Superman and Spider-Man for examples. The character that has not been on the comic book has been around for a long time, too. I mean, you had Adam West playing Batman fucking 30 years ago. I don't know what the real number is, but a long time ago. So it goes back to what I'm saying in the sense that maybe fathers and mothers and, you know, grandmas aren't like that character came from a comic book. They're just saying, oh, look, it's Batman. Like, you know who Batman is. You know what I mean? Like, it's not you don't know that it derived. I mean, maybe I'm being stupid and I don't know, but I think it's easy for it to assume that people sometimes just don't know.
I think people know that they exist. Right. Like, yeah, there's Batman comic books, but I've never read one. Right. You know, I like the Christopher Nolan movies, though. Like, people know who Batman is, who Spider-Man is, who Superman is, but they maybe have never cracked the pages of a comic book one time. And that's a shame, because there's so much. The reason they make all these fucking movies is because there's so much great source material to make them from.
How cool would it be if you're a kid or an adult, you know, probably a kid if you're, well, probably an adult if I'm talking about Ryan Reynolds. But how cool would it be if he were to come out and say, look, you know, we've got Deadpool coming and X-Force and all that shit. You know, it's loosely based on this X-Force 1 through 17. You should go read them and then come watch the movie. You know what I mean? How cool, how fucking many of those issues would people try and go to find if Ryan Reynolds or Tom Holland or whoever it was came out and said, you know, specifically, look, here's the trade, the paperback. You know, here's what this movie's kind of based on. You know what I mean? Go check it out.
We made this joke about Rob Liefeld's inability to draw feet. Go check out X-Force 1 through 10.
Right.
You know, like, that way you get the joke, too.
Right.
It's not an inside joke for, like, Fat Gabe in the movie theater. It's an inside joke for all 200 people in the movie theater. And it's just that much better.
But you don't, and you don't even have to collect. Like, nobody's saying, you know, you like Batman the movie, so you should start collecting, because that'll fucking never happen anyways. You're not going to collect all of Batman.
Go get a trade paperback.
That's what I mean. Then, you know, then maybe you go into the comic book store and you're like, wow, there is a lot of shit in here that's not on the TV. You know what I mean? Or in the movie theaters. There's a lot of stuff in there that maybe you're going to like anyways.
Deadpool's comic books are way less vulgar than his movie. Oh, man. So here's a little clip from that panel. It was pretty good.
It was good. I'm not, like I said, it's weird to me. I like the stories and I love reading comic books, but I have an inability to remember anything. And so I'm not good with names. And I don't try to commit, like, who wrote this book? Who drew it? I can't do it. I can't commit
because
that to my brain.
It's just going
to
go away.
It won't happen. So these things are cool to me because I get to hear stories and fun, you know, fun stories. But it's just not the most appealing thing. But it was good. I like Green Lantern. So
right. So here's a clip from the panel with a bunch of people whose names Juan forgot.
Well, you know that song on Sesame Street? It's like, one of these things is not like the other. It is on the other in this panel here. Everybody here has contributed so much to the mythology and the history of the Green Lantern character. And essentially, I did like two fill-ins with the character. So I was a fan. I loved Kyle Rayner as a concept. I thought being a Spider-Man fan, he had that kind of everyman quality that Hal Jordan or John Stewart or some of the other Green Lanterns didn't have. You know, he's capable of making the mistakes where the other guys seemed a little too perfect for me.
Oh, man. So up next was Carl Weathers.
That's funny. That's really funny.
Oh, man.
So okay. Now you got to tell that story. I mean, you can't just let it happen.
I know. So, look, Colorado Springs Comic Con, they are doing their level best. There's a shitload of moving parts to a convention. Like,
especially when you're in a new fucking space.
So, they're in a new fucking space, which incidentally, someone had talked about how they ended up getting that space last minute and, like, all this other stuff. Like, it sounds like this was a difficult build, for lack of a better term. You know, they ended up having a lot of roadblocks thrown in their way, and they managed to pull it off. Like, we get it. The lines may have been awful. Some things you didn't like.
I'm going to enter a crying baby in right now.
Something like that. There you go. But in the program, they misspelled Carl Weathers' name. Okay, Carl Weathers of Rocky fame, Happy Gilmore fame, Arrested Development fame. I love the Eric.
Is he really famous for that?
In certain circles, yeah. But you know, this man was in like probably the ultimate boxing movie.
Right.
He's been in movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Predator.
He was in Predator. He made Action Jackson. He made, you know, Happy Gilmore. He's been in just a fuck ton.
You know who Carl Weathers
of amazing
is.
Movies, right? But in the program, his name is spelled Weathers. They left out the H. And so the entire con, because it's a mistake and it's funny, and we all do that. We see a mistake and we have to rag on
it. There's probably 1,000 mistakes on our website.
Oh, that's it? Just 1,000? Sorry, I forgot you only count with your dick.
Yeah.
So there's one mistake. But so the entire con, Juan and I just talked about Carl Weathers because it was really funny.
And it was very funny.
I did at one point mention how hilarious it would be if the guy that came to the panel was a dude named Carl Weathers, who was a Carl Weathers impersonator.
Yes.
And I thought that would be really funny. Again,
there would have been an uprising.
There would have been some very upset people. Again, this was moderated by our friend Eric. Like, he did a really good job.
He did not fall.
He did not fall this time, but jokes were made about falling.
Yes.
And that is important. That when you make a mistake, everybody makes fun of you. So,
yes.
Colorado Springs Comic Con, when you hear us riffing on Carl Weathers, just remember we also made fun of Eric for falling down, and we love you both.
And I make fun of myself all the time.
Oh, yeah, because I fall down all the time, too. But, I mean, this was cool. It was funny. It was billed as 80s action, but because Eric wanted to ask him about fucking Arrested Development and shit, it ended up being the dichotomy of Carl Weathers.
You know, here's
action
the thing.
Star,
I don't
comedian
I don't star. Even fucking read those titles, so I have no idea. I'm happy that you remembered, because I don't. I just like, oh, cool. We're gonna talk about Carl Weathers.
Carl Sweaters.
Carl Weathers. career.
And
so.
It was interesting, because it's interesting to hear him talk about basically the two sides of acting and the things that he likes about this, the things he likes about that. You know, his storied career. Like, yeah. He's done a ton of fucking cool shit.
His hands were huge.
His hands
I don't know if you noticed
huge.
That or not,
yeah.
But his hands were ginormous.
He is still a jacked dude.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, he filled out a suit coat, and that is... I mean, I fill out a suit coat, but only in the stomach area, not in the arms area. Like, he was an imposing figure, man. But he was really, really cool. Like, just genuinely
very nice.
Nice, engaging, funny.
He got the job of Apollo Creed by lying and saying that he knew how to box when he did not.
When he did not, which is amazing. Yeah, he was a genuine guy.
He seemed like my grandpa.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. You know what I think my favorite part was, though? They talked to him about something. I don't even remember what the question was. But then he just talked for like 5 minutes about how much he fucking loves Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. I think it was a technical question about
movies. Oh, right,
movies.
Because he's a director, too.
Yeah.
He's working on a directing project that he was a little cagey about.
Netflix,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, because it's not something that he's... No, that was Stefan.
Was it Stefan?
The Netflix show.
Oh, okay.
The Netflix show that, I mean, it's on Netflix, but I cannot talk about it. You know, so there was a little bit of that, but he did a really, like, he loves Jaws. like, and it was really cool to listen to him talk about that. You know, this one, there was a lot of good things said, but the depth of it is not as broad because it's just a one-on-one interview.
Right,
like,
right.
It was a lot of fun. Just a really cool little moment. You know, it's just as long, and it's kind of cool because the time isn't separated between, like, five or six people. You know, you get to ask a question of Carl Weathers, and Carl Weathers answers it.
Right.
You know, and the next person asks their question, and he answers it. You know, I got to... And it's interesting. He's very interested in semantics. Like, several times people ask questions, like the question I asked, how do you feel about Michael B. Jordan's portrayal of your son in, you know, Creed?
Right.
I don't feel any way about it.
Because he had nothing to do with it.
I have nothing to do with it. I have no emotion behind it. I can just appreciate that it's a good movie. And people liked it so much that they're making another one.
Right.
You know, and that was cool. Like, it's cool that he's, you know, he's... All, it seems like he's one of those guys that's kind of trying to always learn. So it was good. It was a good conversation.
It was like without the comedy, I think. Well, I mean, there was comedy in there too, but it kind of reminds me of one of those. I made the comment on the picture you took that it reminded me of kind of like a late night talk show host interview, like, because it wasn't like crazy, and it was just like two dudes just sitting up there chatting about his career. You know, it's cool.
It was cool. I liked it a lot. And Eric, you did a great job and didn't fall down, so there you go. Here's a little clip of Eric not falling down.
So do you like working for Deadpool, okay?
Sorry.
do you like working with Deadpool?
Absolutely. That was a good question.
All right, last panel of Saturday. Stefan Kupchichek. Yes, is how the moderator said it.
I think it's Kupchichek.
Kupchichek.
I could be wrong.
I think that's right. So
Colossus.
If you're not familiar with the name, he plays Colossus in Deadpool. No, you won't. Never mind. I was about to tell you, I think you have to get one lane over, but you don't. So, this is exactly what you were talking about with the Green Lantern thing. Stefan is a fucking nerd.
Yes.
He loves comic books.
That motherfucker was able to deduce who the studio wanted him to play without them fucking telling him.
And he went so... He was so fucking excited.
I think I do have to get over.
You might, yeah. Oh, yeah, right there. 1,500 feet. He was so fucking excited to play Colossus that he was told, send 4 takes to this thing. Like, you know, to the audition.
It was like 4 words, wasn't it? I don't remember, it was very long.
He said he had to do like 4 sentences and he needed to send the studio 4 takes. And him and his girlfriend, who he said, my girlfriend, my wife now, did 140 fucking takes to get 4 cuts to send to the studio. That's how bad he wanted to be in a Marvel movie. His exact words were, I'm going to not do the stupid Russian accent every time I talk about him. His exact words were, I have always wanted to be in the Marvel movie.
Right.
You know, with the intro that goes... You know, I mean, he genuinely fucking loves comic books. Like, I was excited to ask him, you know, you're talking about what a big nerd you are. You're talking about what a collector is. What's the pride and joy of your collection? And with no hesitation, Giant Size X-Men #1, first appearance of Colossus, first appearance of Storm. Like, and he knew what the fuck he was talking about. And that's the kind of people that you want to be in those movies.
It was beautiful. Because those people who were in there for purely like, oh my God, he's an actor, could go back now and be like, oh, I wonder what he was talking about. Like, he, because not just in that one instance, because again, not everybody's going to be able to afford fucking
Giant Size X-Men 1. Yeah, because that's like a $500 book.
But I mean, you go back and you're like, man, this guy's excited about this.
About,
you
know, X-Force.
Maybe
about
I'm going to go read it.
Yeah. You know, when somebody asked him, like, and it's so. For the comic book reader, there's a very obvious answer. okay? Is there any one person in the Marvel Universe that Colossus hasn't been able to team up with that you would want to team up with in a movie? Okay? The obvious...
Hey, that was Juan who asked that question.
Yeah. Was that you?
Yeah. So my question was, now that Marvel is bringing everything home and together, taking into account actor and... For me, it was taking into account actor and... character, who would you want to share screen time with?
So the obvious, I don't think this was you. I think somebody else asked something really similar, like who would you want to like interact? I don't know.
There was an X-Men one too.
I think it may have specifically been the X-Men, but the obvious answer is Wolverine because
right.
of the Speedball special.
Right. That was the X-Men question.
And that's exactly what he said. He didn't even say Wolverine.
I think that's my wife.
It's glorious. No. I thought that was a ringtone for a while.
It just means that my phone is on sound.
Glorious. So, his answer was immediate Speedball special. And I don't think the person who asked the question understood what he meant. You know, and it's one of those moments where you're just like, oh, man. Like, his comic book knowledge is real. Like, he knows what he's talking about. He's familiar with the source material. His love for it comes through on screen. Somebody even talked about how they used to play the X-Men arcade game, and they loved doing the, like, the flex electricity thing that he would do. And he said, we tried to do something similar to that when I was fighting Juggernaut in the movie. Like, it's really, really cool the way he, like, brings the comic books into what he's doing. And that's a lot of fun. So, you know, it was cool. And it's cool to listen to him talk about how he's got other projects coming up. All of them sound fairly secret. At one point he said, do I blow the NDA right now? And everybody's like, yes, please. And then I better not because I get fired.
So the answer to my question when I asked him about who we wanted to share screen time was pretty cool. Cause it almost was a facet of who Colossus is as a kind of everyday stand-up guy. You know what I mean?
He's like the superhero.
Right.
He's the good guy, like, period.
Right. So his first answer was Captain America. That's who he wanted to, you know.
Captain America and Thor.
And Thor, yeah.
So
yeah.
that the three of them could be good guys
right.
together.
Yeah, it was cool.
And then he said, but of course I would also want to fight Hulk. So it's good times.
And like, he said that he survived the snap.
Oh, he did say that.
Yeah.
Also, that panel...
It went off the rails pretty quick.
Was a shit show. Yeah. Like,
it went off the rails quick.
People were like, say these stupid phrases in the Colossus voice.
Yeah.
Someone asked him to tell a dad joke in the Colossus voice, and we as an audience had to explain to him what a dad joke was, because he's not from the United States.
Right.
So he doesn't understand the idiom. Like, he doesn't get what dad joke means. So they told the, hey, dad, I'm...
off here and cut through.
Not here, because there's no exit here, but... Hey, Dad, I'm hungry. Hi, hungry, I'm Dad. You know? I mean, it was just, like, dumb shit like that.
Yeah, it went off the rails quick.
Juan and I tried to ask serious questions.
Well, I mean, I tried to ask him a question that would get him to elicit more than, you know...
Saying funny phrases in the Colossus voice.
I'm not interested in hearing him be a monkey up on stage, so... Yeah, it was cool though. He was funny as well.
He was hilarious, and it was cool because he's in Deadpool, he has the freedom to just kind of be a dumbass, because the movie doesn't take itself seriously, so he doesn't necessarily have to take himself seriously.
Right.
So he ragged on things like Iron Fist or the DC movies. Like, he had fan opinions because he's a fan, and
right.
that was really cool to hear. So. So that was pretty much Saturday.
I was so tired.
Then we went to...
And Frank, I'm tired now.
Then we went to Frankie's house, which you heard that. I'm assuming probably like last week when that special episode came out.
I have no idea.
Last...
yeah.
Edit. But...
mistakes were made.
Mistakes? You know, I don't feel like
I don't think so either.
I had a lot of fun.
I'm just kidding.
I had more to drink than I ever really have to drink. But hey,
that was funny.
I didn't hit on anybody's girlfriends or wives, so
no.
That's a good move.
I mean, there was only like two women there, so
which is talked about extensively. Yeah, in
you
that.
Hit on a couple of girlfriends' husbands. And
well, yeah,
boyfriends.
Yeah.
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 I can count to one.
He drank a lot of fucking booze.
Ooh,
smell.
We drank a lot of.
No,
whiskey.
We didn't drink anything.
No, no, I don't mean you. I mean like. As a collective,
I didn't drink
we
no
drank
whiskey.
A lot of whiskey. Holy crap!
Yeah,
Dylan, thank you for bringing Gentleman Jack.
Yeah, Dylan, good. Fucking gentleman.
You are a gentleman. That is true. Juan got called out
except
for bringing Fireball. That was fucking hilarious.
Except for when your dog puked on Gabe.
Oh yeah, that was pretty funny. That happened first thing Saturday. Walking in, talk to Tim. Dylan's dog walks up next to me and pukes on my foot. so funny. He says his dog has nerves. Pretty sure your dog's just stoned. It ate too much. Oh, man. It was a good time, though, man.
It was a good time.
That was a great party. The one, I think I said it in conversation with somebody else. Oh, when we were talking with Brian O'Halloran today, on Sunday. When we went back to the Airbnb that we were staying at, it felt like teenagers sneaking
in. Oh, right.
Like,
because we were being very quiet.
We were being very quiet, which is hard for me when I'm drunk because I want to just, like, burst into laughter, and I'm always going to trip over stuff, and I'm stupid when I'm drunk. So.
That's true.
But, yeah, there's a lot of fun.
Mel, he was drunk.
I was incredibly
completely drunk.
Yeah. It's okay. It doesn't happen very often, so it's okay.
I know.
Next morning, we woke up, and the people who
which
house,
is today.
Yeah. Well, I know, but they're not listening to it today.
No, I know, but I'm talking about today in the sense of our time.
I know. All right. Good call, Juan. You're smart. You
know, God. Just move on. Why is that
best?
So hard for you?
Because I'm tired. So the couple whose house we stayed at in their basement, which was very unmurdery, just so you know, Mel, it was really nice. Juan slept in the recliner instead of in the bedroom that was provided for us, which I thought was
funny.
Oh, it
was beautiful.
It was an amazing recliner. But they made us breakfast, and that was really nice.
Yes.
Eggs, sausage, donuts, melon.
Malone.
Watermelon. Well, it was cantaloupe, but watermelon.
Post-water cantaloupe.
But yeah.
It doesn't work.
It was super sweet of them. They were really good people.
Yeah.
Had a nice conversation with them. He used to be an air traffic controller, which sounds like a fucking crazy stressful job
I
don't ever want to have.
No.
No, I would be bad at it.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, man, planes are flying. I'm so high. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you wouldn't
get that job.
So back to the convention.
Loose day today.
Made sure Frankie Cerna was alive, which he was. Congratulations on living through that, Frank. We basically covered two panels on Sunday. The first one
today.
Was... Yeah, today. We can just say Sunday. It's okay. You don't have to correct me.
Shh, move forward.
Which was the first one?
At what time was it?
It was The Walking Dead.
Oh, it was The Walking Dead one.
I was just trying to kick it to you, but whatever. It was called The Dead of The Walking Dead, which I found fairly witty. As three actors that were on The Walking Dead, but their characters have been murdered.
Me to complaint number whatever we're at. Stephen Ogg was supposed to be on this panel. I don't even know if he was here.
I don't think he was here.
He might not have been. I don't remember if. So to be fair, they might have.
To be fair,
they might have announced that he wasn't going to be there earlier, and I wasn't paying attention. But they have on the advertisement in the room. They had his picture up still. It was still in the advertisement saying he would be at the panel. Also. Because that's not the only one.
Negasonic
was also, I don't know if she was at the show either at all, but she was also still advertised for the panel, and she wasn't there.
Yeah.
It was weird.
So this was an interesting panel in so much as that we get to learn a little bit about what it's like to be on The Walking Dead, the process of getting on The Walking Dead, what it's like after you've been on The Walking Dead, but... It was good, and it was interesting, and it's all characters that I like on the show, but there was, like, nothing spectacular about it. It was just people having a conversation about a show they used to be on, and it was pretty fun.
I liked it.
It was interesting to realize that of the three people that were on the panel, only one of them has ever read the comic books.
Yep.
Like, and I find that kind of fascinating that, again, there's so much source material, so much that you can draw on, that you just don't. And that's weird. Like, that seems like, you know, the lady that plays Olivia, and I'm not going to be able to remember any of the actors' names at this point, but the lady that plays Olivia seems to have the mentality for acting that I would have.
Right.
I don't know anything about guns, so I'm going to fucking look up a million things about guns on the internet so that I don't look like a dumb fuck when I'm on screen. I don't know anything about canning, so I'm going to look up everything I can about canning just so I know what the hell I'm talking about. I don't know anything about The Walking Dead. Well, she read The Walking Dead, but it sounded like she was a fan.
So there's only one of the three things on that I agree with you about, which is obviously the reading of the source material. Because I think you should know that no matter what, you know, if they're making a Total Recall number 4 and it's a reboot, you should probably look and see, you know, what's going on in the other ones. I would do. I have that. The other shit does not sound like anything that would help you during the show, because knowing anything about guns is not going to help you say the lines that they're going to give you for the show.
I think you missed what I said. She approached it the way I would probably approach it. I'm not saying every actor should do that.
What I'm saying is
that's how I would do it.
I know. What I'm saying is that part of what she was talking about didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
In the sense that it's not like they're going to riff all of a sudden and be like, you know, we're going to talk to you about canning today, Olivia. Like, it's just weird to me. Like, they're going to tell you where to be and how to be and how what you're saying. You know what I mean? You're not going to all of a sudden talk about canning or something fucking weird. Just weird to me. That's all I'm saying. It was just a weird process.
But it was a good talk. It was an interesting
thing. I enjoyed it. I like The Walking Dead anything, so.
I do too. Like, I like it. I like hearing the stories. It's interesting to hear them talk about, like, the process of how they got on the show.
Right.
And that kind of stuff. I mean, but there's not a whole ton to tell about this one. It was just kind of, it started, it was good, and it was over. And that was kind of it.
Yeah, I mean.
There wasn't anything crazy fascinating. It was pretty
cool. I like hearing about how they got hired and shit like that. It was cool.
The one, I did like the bit about how they felt when they found out that their character was going to die. And all of them responded with, crap, now I got to go find another job. You know, that's a thing, like. You know, the lady that plays Olivia said something really very important, that when you get on Twitter and say, I hope your fucking character dies, you're actually saying to them, I hope you lose your job. And that's fucked up. Like, you know, you may think that, it's just a fictional character, it doesn't matter. But what happens to that fictional character on that TV show affects a real person's life.
Right.
So it's interesting. You don't see that side of things very often, I don't think.
It's weird to me, and it sounded like it was weird to Juan, the guy who played Morales, that they would bring him on and have this huge cliffhanger and then kill him on the first time he was back.
Yeah.
It was fucking weird.
It was weird.
It was super weird. Like, he seemed pretty disappointed in the fact that, because he had said, you know, I was thinking about, you know, how I could contribute now that it's been probably 2 or 3 years since I've been on the show, and, you know, how we could move Morales forward and how I could be a cog in the Negan machine. And and then he got the script and he was like, oh.
Lame.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's such a weird, like, if you, in my opinion, doesn't matter if you're going to call back an OG, even if you're going to kill him, like, fucking.
Do something spectacular.
You leave him on. You leave on a giant cliffhanger and then kill him. I think it was like halfway through the next season's. I don't know if it was the mid season or if it was the beginning of the next season. I can't remember, but I think it was the mid season. Now that I remember, but it was odd to me.
It was odd.
He got a maybe an episode and a half to be back, which was funky.
It was, but it was a good panel. So a little bit of that.
For me, I guess it's a story I've told a few times before now, but. I think it was episode 4, it was the campfire scene when we first get the invasion of the zombies that ultimately killed Beth, I think, if you guys remember that episode back in the first season. The rehearsal for that kind of caught us by surprise, and I remember experiencing real fear because we didn't get a full sense of where all the extras were going to be coming out of, and we were just kind of in it, and it was like they were going to shoot the rehearsal. And sure enough, we went to action, and we just had a general sense, and I thought that this was to find out the specifics of what exactly was going to go down, but then the zombies just started to pile in from the wilderness, and they wouldn't stop, and that was just a real moment of real adrenaline, and everywhere I turned, there was like a whole new zombie, and just swinging from the fences everywhere I go, and that was, I think they just captured some real serious pareja anxiety and adrenaline. Didn't know where the next threat was going to be coming from. So that, in my head, stuck out as one of the kind of the most memorable experiences of shooting, because...
Last panel. What'd we go through?
James Murray. Impractical Jokers.
Okay, so this is the only panel that they announced that we couldn't take videotape of, which bummed me out. Because I think this is the one that I would have been the most excited to have video of.
Right. So my only guess... So I have two guesses. One...
Guess one.
They saw us doing it, and they had never said anything, so they frowned upon it and decided to say something now.
Which is late.
Yeah. Or two, that because they have a movie coming out, just in case, they didn't want anything to get out.
Which is less lame.
Right.
But still sucks for us.
Well, I mean, it's weird.
Personally, it's like as a podcast, not in general.
It's weird because everybody else has shit coming out. Like, it's not like he's the only actor that has, something coming out soon. It's just weird to me. But that's my guess. That was my guess. Maybe True TV was like, yeah, you got to make sure that nothing gets out.
Right. So, first things first, he is promoting his new book.
Awakened,
which is really cool. And this isn't how he started the panel.
No.
Like, this came up, like, towards the end of the panel. But I want to be sure to, like, mention it now so that I don't forget it later. Awakened, it sounds like it's a thriller with space aliens and, like, some horror elements. He said he worked on it, like, 14 years ago for, like, a whole year of his life. And it sounds really fucking cool. And I'm actually pretty excited to read it. So
he said nobody wanted to read it. Nobody opened his envelope. Out of the publishers he sent it to.
That his
14 years ago.
Yeah, that his manuscript got sent back to him unopened.
Isn't that the fucking crazy thing? Like, he couldn't get somebody to open his mail, even though on the off chance this book was fucking amazing. But now, because he's famous, kind of famous at least, somebody gave him a chance, even though maybe it was a terrible book.
Right.
You know what I mean? Those are that's a weird...
It is a weird conundrum.
...dynamic to me. Like, read the book. Fucking who cares who he is?
Like, fame affords you opportunities that you maybe deserve, but also maybe don't deserve.
Right, right.
Like, and we don't know. I haven't read his book.
Yeah, no, it could be good. It could be terrible.
It could be the worst book ever. Hopefully it's one of the best books ever. But, you know, it's just... It is a weird situation. But all of that aside, plugging his book aside... We interacted with him two times before the panel. The first time Juan got an autograph from him, and he was super, super cool to us. And, like, was just genuinely a nice guy and went, like, above and beyond to be super cool to us about their block party in San Diego. Like,
Kari Payton did the same thing when I got his autograph last year. Kari sat in front of the table. Murr was coming out to greet people
and
shake hands.
And doing just really cool stuff and just went the extra step to interact with us in a very special way, fan to celebrity. When we went back today, we got him to do a little plug on video for
maybe.
Us. Well, I mean, we got him to do it, but
right.
You may not because...
Doyle.
Because Doyle, that's right. I think we'll be okay, but that's okay. That's irregardless.
Fucking Doyle.
Which I don't think is a real word now that I've said it out loud.
I think it's just regardless.
I think it's regardless. regardless of that fact that this video may never see the light of day because Doyle sucks dicks. Like, regardless of that fact, he did do it.
He did.
And it is... super funny.
It's funny. I've had three people. I've showed three people it already. You know, aside from us,
right? And you don't have to show me. I watched.
You're right.
You
right. No, that's what I'm saying. But then they think it's fucking amazing. So,
and we should post it. But anyways, we'll see. That's beside the point. So those two interactions with him, he was genuinely super fucking personable.
Yeah,
he wants
seemed
to meet
excited.
You. He wants to meet you. He's excited for you. He was hugging people. One lady cried. She was so excited to see him. She started crying. And he came out and was like, "You don't need to cry. We're here having fun. I love you guys. This is amazing." She's like, "Yeah, man, I love you." And I'm not trying to make fun of her. I mean, she was just having having the same kind of emotional
moment
that I'm fucking having all the time.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was so cool the way he interacted with his fans, because he's just he talks about in the panel how at the end of each season they go and celebrate by fucking eating at Red Lobster.
Yes.
Because they get fancy, because they're regular dudes. They're just a bunch of fucking idiots that work their asses off to do this stupid fucking show.
Yeah, comedy's not something you can just do.
Yeah.
That's some shit that you can't just be funny. Like, you could, I feel like that's one of the hardest genres to do. You can get taught and you can go train and you can, you know, you can do things. In my mind, and I could be wrong because I'm not an actor, I feel like dramas and thrillers and action films especially are a little easier to do.
There are literally people sitting on a couch on the side of the road hitchhiking. No, sorry, that was fucking amazing. I had to put that in there.
But I feel like comedy's something that you have to have. You have to be on point. You have to know what you're doing. A lot of comedies give you the opportunity to not just say what's on the paper. So you've got to be able to come up with something that's funny. And I don't think that that's always the easiest thing to do with people.
And I don't think it's always teachable either.
No, that's what I mean.
I think there's a lot of people that try to be funny. I remember, for example, this one stand-up comedian that was on our show one time that was not fucking funny. I haven't brought him up in a long ass time. That was rough. That was real rough. Anyway, this dude understands that his fame is predicated on how much the fans love them. And you see it all throughout the show. You see it all throughout how they present it. They want the interaction. They want you to goof with them. They want you to be fun with them. Like, I'm going to fast forward to the end of the panel. Murr had to get out the door because he had to be in Denver by 4 for a book signing. But even as he's walking out the stage and people are all, "Murray, Murray, Murray, Murray," he was stomping and shaking everybody's hand, giving people hugs, just being an amazing fucking human being to everybody that he walked by. Like, and he doesn't have to do that shit. Like, he doesn't have to. And we know he doesn't have to because plenty of celebrities don't do that
right shit.
But
and whatever, it's their right.
Yeah, it's their right. Whatever. Yeah. I don't give a shit. But he knows that he's just a regular ass dude that made good because the fans liked the shit that he was doing. And as a consequence, he just keeps doing it. And he keeps being a regular ass guy that's kind to other people. So it was really, really cool. But as far as the panel goes, by far the funniest fucking panel that we were a part of.
There was a lot of questions asked in that panel. Lots.
Especially considering that it was 15 minutes shorter
than
all the other panels. Again, because he had to get out
right
to this other event. But probably my favorite thing that happened, and there will be pictures of this. Unfortunately, we don't have any like audio clip of this because we weren't allowed to. But when he realized, you know, we talked about how funky the setup was for the panel room and that it's in a different part of the mall, he realized that we were in a store, like in the mall proper. He goes, "Holy shit, we're in the mall. Like, we're in the mall. And he gets up, runs over to the door, and there's a, it's two guys that I had taken a picture of earlier, a dude dressed as the Punisher and a dude dressed as Batman, and they were getting their pictures taken by somebody. And he just went and stood right next to him and just jumped into the picture that some lady was taking of them and just runs back onto the stage. It was like, this is amazing. This is a wet seal, old wet seal that's been shut down. He's yelling at people that are walking past in the hall, come in, everything's on sale. Like, just being a total dipshit about the fact that we were in the mall, Like, going off about how Rocky Mountain Chocolate was, like, right there. And, like, I mean, saying the same things that we were saying. It's amazing he that said there's that a there pretzel was, bits place in the Comic-Con.
Said that there was they were doing 10% off of his ass.
Oh, man. I was excited. I got to ask him about the ferret. And so I think it was you that said we should ask him if we can see the ferret.
Right.
But I didn't want to ask him to pull down his pants because I remembered that it was like kind of on his hip.
But then
so I said the question I asked instead was what was it like
explaining? You didn't even get it out.
Well, I did get some of it out, but I said, what was it like explaining to your friends and family I had to get this fucking tattoo of a ferret, right? And he just jumps in front, moves the table that he's sitting behind, and like drops trow and shows us his ferret. And it was amazing. He told a hilarious story about his mom and how he lied to his mom about not getting a tattoo.
She found out when it aired.
Yep, she found out when it aired, and she was very disappointed. He also made his nephews lie to his mom about his tattoo. I thought that was also pretty hilarious. So, I don't know. It's just, it was hilarious. It was funny. He was animated. He was loving the fan interaction. He was just answering as many questions as possible. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I shouldn't roll down the window, huh? Makes a little bit of extra noise. But, yeah, it was great. It was really good.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Impractical Jokers, man, I don't understand. It's weird because it's on all fucking day on True TV.
Literally, there's only two shows on True TV. It's the Carbonara Effect.
Carbonaro.
I said the...
Carbonaro.
I said Carbonara, which is a kind of...
Carbonara.
Which is a kind of pasta sauce.
The Carbonara Effect. It's all about pasta magic.
The Carbonara Effect with never mind.
Fettuccine?
Joke's gone because I can't remember the fucking blonde-tipped guy's name.
Guy Fieri?
Guy Fieri. Fieri. That's
how he says it. Anyway.
That and Impractical Jokes. I mean, if you haven't seen that movie,
yeah, it's insane. It's funny. Go watch it. If you haven't fucking seen it, it's really funny.
Apparently, you're in Afghanistan, you are a big
you
fan.
You love him. It's weird because they're not like huge celebrities, but they have a fucking ginormous following. The people who watch that show, there's a lot of people. It's crazy to me.
I feel like if you watch that show, you actively watch it.
Right.
Like you go out of your way to see every fucking episode of the show. Because I know I did. And once you introduced me to the show, like I literally got a insert beep noise here. And then watched every single episode of it.
It was cool. I got to talk to him about the movie a little bit. Because I wasn't sure. Like, if you've ever seen Impractical Jokers, they do challenges, and then you can lose the challenge, and then whoever has the most losses has a punishment at the end of the episode, which are fucking hilarious. So I wasn't sure if it would be like an hour and a half of challenges and then one giant punishment. So I was curious about the format of a show like this that would translate to a movie. And so it's going to be formatted in the sense that throughout the episode there's going to be multiple challenges. Apparently it's one long road trip episode, and so they're
all competing to get across country,
right?
Like somehow, and I feel like there's probably some. If you lose this challenge, it somehow sets you back or prevents you from winning this.
Yeah,
race.
I don't know, but it's cool because there's. He said there was going to be probably four or five mini punishments, and then one major punishment
that he says almost tore their friendship apart.
Which I don't know if he's being facetious.
He
or
laughed
not,
after he said it, so it can't be that serious.
But I'm excited. I don't know if it's going to get a giant theatrical release, but that's a movie I want to go see for sure.
I assume it'll get a giant theatrical
release. I have no idea.
It's got to go everywhere. I mean, it's a big enough TV show that it would have to. I mean, Jackass got a massive theatrical release.
That's true. You're right. Two of them.
Two of them. That's right. I did find it interesting. Somebody asked him what the worst punishments or something like that. And he said the one punishment that he wishes they could do, or no, what's the punishment that got you in the most trouble is what they asked. He said the punishment that he wishes they could do, but he feels like they would get in too much trouble, is that you go into a wedding, and when somebody says, speak now or forever hold your peace, you stand up and speak your peace and interrupt the wedding. And then once you're done talking, you realize that you're in the wrong wedding and just leave. And I cannot laugh about
that. It's
funny. Just thinking about it. I mean, and then the best thing he said about it is, as long as that punishment isn't on me, I don't give a shit. Like how much trouble you get in, because that's amazing and it would be funny. So
it was good. I really enjoyed it.
And right now, you're not going to hear a clip from that panel.
Nope.
Just, I don't know, put a trailer for the show in or something.
Rising from the depths of a state called Michigan, two inebriated dorks prepare their plan for intergalactic domination, mixing their extensive knowledge of geek culture with their insatiable thirst for alcohol. These two man-children bring you a show like you've never heard before. They will tell you tales from faraway lands and have you questioning their taste in beer. But make no mistake, friend, for the best coverage of your favorite comics, films, and TV shows, there's no better source for you to get your fix. So listen up, strap in, and prepare yourself as Jake and Tom conquer the world.
On the floor of Colorado Springs Comic Con, we're here with AC, good friend of Tim. Goes by Artwork by AC. Well, he's a good friend of Tim Moore because he's never really been on the show except for the Superman 1000, where he was like the most intelligent person on the episode. He's like, I actually know things about Superman. People are like, I'm buying this comic because it's going to pay for my child's college education.
Oh, that is a gamble.
Yeah, it is. How are you doing today, man?
Well, it is early yet, but it's Saturday morning. We're at Colorado Springs Comic Con 2018. It's weird. It's weird, man. Like, I like it, but I've never been in this kind of venue before. It's throwing me off a little bit.
So how do you feel about literally being in a mall?
I think this is the GART Sports part of it, which I am familiar with. However, I'm not sure what part of that we're in right now. This might be where, like, the hiking shoes were.
It's awesome. Like, it's such an interesting space that they're in. Like, it seems to be working. There was a lot of confusion, like, yesterday with the volunteers as to where things were. But now that we've smoothed that out over day one, like, I'm pretty excited for what's coming forward.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Matt, even Denver Comic Con, which is bigger con, like, it doesn't matter. Even after a few years, there's still bugs to work out in the morning, in the afternoon. Like, it's new every time. I mean, you get new volunteers a lot of the time. You get some people that carry over, some people that love it, that are always part of it. You know, this is altered reality, so a lot of these folks do Rhode Island and stuff like that. They know what they're doing, but you get new volunteers, you get new people, you get a new space. You know, you put sand in a machine that would otherwise be able to topple a house and it'll knock it down. And occasionally that's what happens, but that happens to everybody. The important thing is they recover, and they recover quick, and they move on their feet, and everything is working really smooth this morning.
It is. It definitely is. There hasn't been too many hangups. I mean, even yesterday, like I said, it was just at the very start. There was some confusion as to where things were, but whatever. It's good. It's all good. It's a nice open space. Like, the aisles are big. Like, hopefully it gets packed today. What are you looking forward to the most, like, as an artist and vendor?
Well, so I've been getting into anime a little bit more lately. A lot of really good recommendations. I watched a lot of Western animation growing up. And so I've been getting into My Hero Academia.
Okay.
And it's a really compelling show. And it's about these kids that are going to superhero school. They have powers. They're trying to, like, learn how to be responsible. They're not supposed to fight in public. The rules are really stringent. And I thought it'd be kind of interesting to make adult versions of these characters, like, after they've grown up, after they've, you know, come into their own power and So I did a few pictures of that, of Deku, Uraraka, Tsukuyomi, and a group shot with kind of like the shadow of All Might in the background. So it's like them in a hopeful, positive future, taking the mantle. The show kind of reminds me of Kick-Ass a little bit, where it seems all silly and funny, and then it kind of takes a turn for the serious.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the stakes go up, and everybody is just, like, clinging to life by their fingernails. And, I don't know, I kind of like that hero going uphill stuff. So I made some pictures of that, and I got my classics. I mean, I got Rorschach, who is the classic uphill battle hero, will not compromise, even in the face of Armageddon. You know, I love that, because we're human, we're mortal, we have limitations, and the only thing we can rely on is how far we're willing to go. And sometimes it's enough to accomplish what we need, sometimes it's not, but nobility's in the struggle.
It's awesome. Like, it's awesome to listen to you, like, as an artist, connect with other things because of the themes and the stories. Like, I read comics because I love the stories in it. Like, I'm, you know, the art on a book sometimes can be secondary for me because I'm really into, like, the characters. And it seems like you, as an artist, are latching onto the character and the idea first and saying, I want to create that because I love the story that it's telling. That's really, it seems like a different take from most artists. Most artists see it visually and they're like, I want to draw that because that's really cool looking, you know?
Agreed, man. Agreed. And I mean, art is a visual medium, but, you know, I'm fortunate that I've never had to draw anything that I didn't care about. Even commissions, it's always characters I like. It's, stories that matter to me, or that, you know, I want Batman, but I want Dark Knight Batman. I want, you know, Superman, but I want, like, Ultraman or something, you know, some kind of variation. I mean, everyone has their reasons for the version of the character. They're like, you're going to see a million Batman and Superman pictures around as you walk around the aisles here, because that's like, I mean, this is a business, right? And people will want to draw what they can sell. You don't want to take these prints home. You want to make some money off of it. You want to move it. You want to have the option to come back next year and try some more things. I'm a little different in that respect. I have a day job, so I can follow art right now strictly as my passion, strictly as something that I love. So there's no reason for me to cater to the whims of the market. I mean, yeah, I want to get out of here and not be in the red, and I haven't been yet, thank God. But
right.
You know, there's not a whole lot of Rorschach pictures around here. There's not a whole lot of... I mean, I have Iron Gwen, who's Spider Gwen, but I gave her the Civil War Spider-Man Iron Spider robotic limbs just because I thought that'd be a cool variant. I haven't seen that anywhere yet.
Right.
That was interesting to me. I've got...
I haven't seen a ton of Judge Dredd pictures, that's for sure.
Not enough Dredd. Never enough Dredd. I love Dredd, man. I love Adi Shankar for making the Dredd movie, for making Castlevania, which is another one of my passions.
Oh, that's awesome.
October Man Season 2.
Have you played Dead Cells?
Dead Cells. No, what's that?
Okay, so there's this game. It just it was on beta on Steam for like a really long time, but it just released on Xbox and PS4. It's called Dead Cells, and it's so much like Castlevania. Like, if you like the video game, you'll love that. Like,
awesome.
I haven't stopped talking about it for like 3 weeks now, so that's awesome.
I'll probably pick that up. If it's on the PlayStation Store, I can get that.
Yeah, and it's like $25 or something like that. Like, it's a super inexpensive, like, download, you know?
Yeah, Metroidvania games, like, they don't require the most processing power, they don't require the most, like, advanced graphics, but the fun and the gameplay is something that you can get still with, you know, without that much spent on 3D, fully immersive VR graphics. It's jumping up on platforms, killing bats, and...
Like, I literally have put more hours into that game in the last, like, 2 weeks than I typically put into any game when I first buy it. Just because, like, I got four kids and a really busy schedule, but this game, like, it's so easy to plop down and play 15 minutes and then walk away from it, or play it for, like, 4 hours. Like, it's just such a good game. Like, that classic platformer style... Perfect. Like, I love games like that.
There's never been anything for me that's beaten that. I mean, I love role players. Those are fun. I love how in-depth they can get with the story. Like, I'm playing Undertale right now. A friend of mine recommended it to me, loaned it to me. The graphics are no better than something you would have gotten in 1982, but the writer is funny. And
nice.
That is just like, you can spend all the money on production in the world and still not have a quality like that that makes you want to keep playing. And Castlevania, Metroidvania, Metroid, all the games like that in that style, that fun never runs out.
Yeah.
And when you can add greater graphics to it and make it more interesting, I mean, the visual style of Castlevania appeals to me. Alucard, the Belmonts,
and the like, you're fighting monsters through like a medieval evil castle. Like, I love all that.
Yeah, and it's so smooth. Like, I mean, the first two Castlevanias, you're like, you can only jump one distance, so you have to measure where you stand before you go.
Right.
Or if you run, you jump one distance. There's no like run, jump, and only jump a little bit. All those weird little quirks that you have to figure out. It gets smoother as you get into the more advanced games. Symphony of the Night, obviously the
right.
first big change, which added a lot more options, added a role-play aspect to it, added leveling
Even
up.
Even Castlevania level. 3 had a lot of that. Like,
Castlevania 3 was awesome.
It was like one of my favorite games when I was a kid. Like being able to play as the different characters and like figuring out like which characters work best for which levels and stuff. Man, I loved that game.
Yeah, the ghost where you need to float over or through things,
yeah.
or I think Grant Dynasty, the thief with the daggers. And,
yeah.
you know, there's, what is his name? The creator of Castlevania, whose name is escaping me right now. Igo?
I'm not
Igo
sure.
Kugrash, I can't remember for sure. He is creating his own, I think it's called like Circle of Blood Circle of Blood. A Castlevania-style game that'll be out. It just got pushed back. I was looking at their Kickstarter page, and it's moved back till 2019.
Ooh.
It's not going to be on the Vita, but it will be PS4. And they released a sort of teaser 8-bit version of the game that was a lot like Castlevania 3.
Nice.
You switch out different characters as you acquire them and use them to get into different parts of the dungeon you couldn't get into before. And I don't know, man. Like that's one of the things where... Yeah, I might be realizing that as a visual artist, the visual component is downplayed a little bit on it, but that doesn't change the fun factor, and it doesn't change that the box art is always completely stunning.
So I remember when I was a kid, that was one of my favorite things, was going through the rule or the instruction booklet, and like the art in it, my imagination would like layer that art onto like the 8-bit or 16-bit graphic. And in
yes.
my brain, like, it was that, even though it didn't really look like that.
You know, you're just giving me an epiphany. That's like a good horror movie never reveals the monster. It lets your brain fill in the gaps.
Huh.
And because once you see it, man, rubber monsters, not as scary as, you know, part of something in a shadow coming after you too fast to react to, too dark to fully understand. And Castlevania, what you're saying with that right now is like, yeah, you're filling in the gaps. You're being programmed with... these images that are so beautiful that carry over with you into the feel of the game, even if the game itself can't possibly live up to having something that detailed in animated form. But it gives you the option to make it work in your own brain, and that's why it adds something special that the highest level of graphics will never be able... Well, I'm making a generalization. We'll probably never be able to duplicate.
Right.
Nothing's as good as your own mind.
Oh, man, I'm going to need you to move to Greeley to be on our show all the time to, like, raise the intelligence level of our show.
No, don't do that. I love it the way it is.
That's awesome. Well, AC, can you tell everybody how they can find you at the con and then also online for after the convention?
All righty. My name is AC Canales. I'm at booth 443, just as you come in from the mall side of it. I'm, like, three booths down. I am on Instagram as Argentium_Eternum with A's in front of both. Eternal Silver. You can find me on Facebook at Artwork by AC, and I will probably be rebranding everything because Argentium Eternum does not roll off the tongue, despite how much I like it. I'm going to have to come up with something a little more marketable, but more on that once my brain gets to work.
Well, once you rebrand, you got to let us know so that we can have you on the show to talk more about it.
Definitely, guys. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Talk about Bailey not wanting to be a part of our group.
Oh, yeah, I don't, sure. Go for it.
I wanted to shame her. I thought she might hear me, but she didn't hear me.
Oh, well, there you go. I wouldn't want to be a part of our group either. Have you heard our show?
Well, it's a part of the long box.
Oh, she don't want to be a part of the other group.
Apparently Dom shamed her at CCBE.
Oh, there you go.
Scandalous. In Japanese, iskandaru.
Hashtag real long boxers, baby. Awesome.
Oh, drama. We'll have to like milk that.
We will.
Thank you, guys.
Of course. So we're here on the floor of Colorado Springs Comic-Con with Babs Webb.
When I was interviewing Ron Mars earlier, I turned around and saw her like super cool dark art. Can you tell me a little bit just kind of about yourself and how you got started doing this really amazing style of art?
I guess I'm local in Denver.
Okay.
So I work from there. I've been doing illustration professionally for like 4 years now. I've been doing cons for about the same amount of time. I'm not really sure. Like, what do you want to know about the art?
So, like, how is it that you, you know, obviously if you're doing professional illustration, you're not doing stuff like you have presented here very often, I would assume. But, like, your art has this cool, like, you know, penciled, like, creepy, like, you know, sigils and, like, that just dark feeling. Like, how did you kind of come into drawing that particular style of art?
I don't know. I was raised in a very religious Roman Catholic Mexican household, and you know, religious iconography
that that's okay
was always ever present in my house. You know, the giant candles and, you know, the billions of crosses everywhere. I mean, my mom, she still on occasion throws blessed salt at me, so my art is very much influenced by, you know, Roman Catholic iconography, you know, the Virgin Mary, stuff like that. And I guess I always found that stuff to be pretty, but also slightly eerie, slightly unsettling, because, I mean, the point of a lot of that work is to remind you of your immortal soul and how it's ever closer to damnation when you sin. So I guess, you know, that really stuck with me, and it's apparent in my art. And also, I guess that's just how I process reality. I see creepy things and they fascinate me. Ever since I was a kid, they terrified me, but they fascinated me. So I would draw them. Yeah.
It's awesome. I also grew up Roman Catholic. So that picture of Jesus that like every grandma has that like follows you, like, and like you, I've always been kind of obsessed with like that iconography. Like all through high school, I would like literally draw like altars, but they were altars based on like the Book of Revelation and stuff. So I think that's probably part of what drew me into your art. Like I've always loved that, you know, using symbolism to like convey messages that are bigger than just like a line drawing can be, you know, it's really cool. So when you're kind of like approaching the blank page, like, are there things that, you know, that you're inspired by, like in your world, or are you just kind of trying to create like new icons?
So, I mean, you know, being a professional illustrator, there's always a certain amount of pressure to be at the same level of rendering as your peers. But you also have to remind yourself that rendering makes good art, but it doesn't equal good art. Just because it's rendered well doesn't necessarily mean that it's an interesting work of art. So that's something that you constantly have to remind yourself and remind yourself, why are you doing this? And with me, it's sort of this thing where I want to express how I process my reality, like how I process the death of a loved one, or how I process missing someone, or a breakup, or a friend breakup even, or, you know, just certain parts of my reality that it, you know, they're difficult for me to get through, but when I sort of find ways to process them, I guess the art that I make at that time reflects how I processed it. And so because of that, all of the art on display, pretty much, they have meanings behind them. They have meanings that are important to me. Who knows if they're important to everyone else? They could be. Some people seem to enjoy them, but, you know, I guess it's just my coping mechanism.
That's
in a
awesome.
Way.
It's awesome that it's like an emotional release. Like it's probably what most art, like whether it be on the page or as music, is intended to be.
Yeah.
It's weird that everybody has to go in and out that way.
Oh yeah, we're in an alley.
So for our listeners, can you tell them how to like find you online so that they can see your art?
Sure. So I'm all over social media. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr. DeviantArt, my Instagram handle is BabsWeb, no space, web with two B's. And that's that's it, I suppose.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoy your art. So
thanks. No, thanks for dropping by. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. All right, still on the floor, Colorado Springs Comic Con. We're hanging out with Frankie Serna, one of our favorite human beings on the face of
Earth.
I won't even rib you about the party thing. But how's it going so far?
It's going great. It was a great Friday and had a good time. A lot of people came by. Saw a lot of old friends, so it was great. And
are you calling me old just because I turned 40?
Yeah, yeah, I am, actually, because I'm old.
Yeah, right?
But it was fun. Real good crowd, and hopefully today is going to be even better.
It's already starting to fill up a little bit more than it was yesterday, that's for sure.
Yeah, we saw a good line out front when we walked in, so that's a good sign.
So,
I'm a little crammed up in this space, though.
Would you have ever expected to do a convention in a mall?
Never. First time, yeah.
It's kind of crazy,
right?
Yep,
it is. It's cool.
Juan's excited that there's a Pretzel Bites place.
Of course.
I know. I'm not saying I'm not excited. I'm saying we as a collective are excited that there's a pretzel place. So, talked a little bit with Tim about the special print that you did for the show.
Yep.
I want to hear your side of the story.
Okay.
Because Tim's side of the story is like, I told Frankie we should do a thing and you were very excited and then he got high. So
it sounds like Tim. Well, yeah, he called me up and asked me if I wanted to do a piece with him, a little collaboration with the 80s theme, I think, like a Thundercats or a He-Man. So we decided on who would do what, and I was all down for doing Mumra.
So, that's awesome. Yeah. So you were talking to us yesterday about that you're going to color the piece.
Yep.
So tell me a little bit about like what you're going to go into with the colorization on it, because it's cool.
I'm probably going to start in with a little bit of light wash and do a little build up that way. I don't know if I'm going to do the original, you know, stick to the traditional painting, or if I'm going to do digital. I haven't decided yet.
Nice.
So I might do digital just to get it done a little bit quicker.
Well,
if not, it'll take me a year to get it done.
I'm excited to see how it turns out, because like I already dig the shit out of the picture.
Awesome.
So
I appreciate
that. It's really cool. You guys both did really good.
Cool. What do you think about leaving it kind of like that unfinished look? Line on there.
I think it's neat because it's like it seems like exclusive you know, it's a little behind the scenes before it's completely finished. You know, it gives it, I feel like for the convention, it's like kind of a perfect thing because it makes people feel like they're getting something a little special, you know?
Awesome. So, I'm glad you think that way about that piece.
My wife insisted I get one too.
Awesome.
She's like, go take one.
So. You want to see the original?
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see the original.
Yeah.
This is perfect for radio.
Pull it out. Yeah, yeah.
I'll take a picture.
They can visualize it.
I was talking with AC about layering your imagination over pictures. So here you go, radio.
Awesome.
Oh, dude. It's
so
cool.
Appreciate you guys. So on my side of the piece, I actually did my side first.
Yeah.
And then Tim did his side last. But he actually went traditional. He did the penciling. He did the inking on his side. And I did a really, I think it's a pretty good strong pencil drawing, which when I take it in to start coloring, it's already done with the depth of it, the dimension. So the shading's in there. I just got to lay in the light washes and then start building it up.
So when you go to color it, like what kind of challenges do you think you're going to have coloring somebody else's style? Because like, you know, you're doing yours, but you also have to do Tim's. And like the picture is very cohesive as a whole, but you can tell the styles are very different and like from two different artists.
Yes.
Like, how are you going to approach like doing Tim's side of it?
Well, I'm going to approach it the way I normally color my pieces. So hopefully that my style is going to convey across the whole image. And hopefully I can compliment his piece. He did a wonderful job inking that. So
I know that if Tim were to color it, he would ship it out to his color guy.
I need to talk to Tim about that. He should start coloring his stuff. I think he can do that.
Oh, he does some of it, but man, the guy that he's got, whose name of course escapes me, because, you know.
Yeah, he does great work.
Yeah, he does really good work. So
I'm going to approach it and probably do more of a painted style to it as opposed to doing flat work like in comic book.
Nice. Very cool. Well, I'm excited to see it, man.
Awesome. Me too. I can't wait.
I'm excited.
Yeah. But I'm glad you're digging the piece, and I hope everybody comes by and picks up a copy from me or Tim. So
we'll definitely post about it today so that people can come to the con and see it. Yeah. So, yeah, very cool.
Get people excited to see the next inclination of the piece.
So for people that are going to hear this interview, because it'll come out in like an episode, can you tell our listeners how they find you online?
Oh,
you
know, definitely, yeah.
For people that, for some reason, haven't heard you on our show yet.
Well, you can get me online at CernaIllustration.com, or I'm on Instagram at CernaIllustration, Twitter, the artist Cerna, and on Facebook, Frankie Cerna, Cerna Illustration, and like, Cerna. I got like 4, 5, 6 different Facebook pages.
Nice. So
I'm all over the place.
If you are one of our listeners and you haven't seen Frankie's art, go check it out. This is some of the best stuff. He did an amazing Conan sketch in my Conan book. He's done
one of my favorites.
Carnage for Juan. Like, yeah. I mean, he's one of our favorites.
Thank
we love,
you guys.
We love Frankie.
Yeah.
We love him more than Tim, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy's a prick.
Tim is a prick. Oh, but I love you, Tim.
That is staying in. That is definitely staying in.
We'll kiss about it later.
Ooh. I don't know. You might have
maybe tonight at the party.
You might have some competition with AC. I don't know. They were
yeah,
getting
they're
pretty close.
Yeah, they get along real well.
Yeah, real well. So, 3 years ago, we stumbled across your booth, and I was like, I really like your art. And ever since then, we've been friends on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all of those places.
All the places.
And every Colorado Springs Comic Con, we stopped by Jessica Barnes's booth, Dragon Crest Studios. Jessica, how has the convention been this year?
It has been a little bit odd, actually,
yeah.
Just from the flow patterns in this place. Because
yeah.
We've got those strange, like, with the pillars in there, but the parking is glorious.
Yeah.
I love the parking.
So how's it feel being in a convention in a mall?
That is weird. But it is also, it's so strange because we've got so many people in this little area. Like, I was trying to find one of my artist friends and I knew which aisle she's down. I went down it 3 times.
Right.
And then I finally found her on my 3rd go round. And I'm like, how are those people? Oh, these people are all probably missing me too. But I mean, it's like nice because we just got like Annie's pretzels delivered. So and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
We've had pretzels every day.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, yeah, I like that part. I like how it is easy to get in and out of.
Right.
Setup was super easy. That was awesome.
There were some big lines yesterday, and I saw some people complaining, but I was just like, you know, as far as it goes, that's pretty normal for a convention on a Saturday.
And I think it was much less than last year.
Yeah, and it's been really easy to get around. The movement's easy. Like, and it's just such a strange setup that it's kind of unique and fun. I've been really enjoying it.
Well, I like that it's very accessible. So this year, you're not in a wheelchair, thank goodness.
Yeah, exactly.
But I had a lovely lady stop by yesterday who has cerebral palsy. And so she's in a wheelchair. And so we talked about art for a long time. But she was totally able to get through, get around.
Right.
Nobody's doing weird stuff. Nobody's blocking her off from places.
Right.
And it is very stressful, I have heard, to go to conventions in wheelchairs or with walkers or any of those. Because there's people everywhere and nothing's accessible.
Last year was awful.
Yes.
Like, it was awful being in a wheelchair. Not just, like, the pain that I was in, but also just
it's like a
getting
double
around. There was, like, a ramp that it would be okay going down, but coming back up it was a pain in my ass. Like,
yes.
I'd be like, Juan, come help me. He's like, you're fat. I'm not helping you.
You're like, I didn't need that much exercise, I promise.
As far as, like, business, how's it been this year?
It's been pretty good. Today picked up a lot.
Nice.
I have not been selling as many Gentleman Animal books yet. I don't think I had this guy for you. I now have the Alphabet of Gentlemen Animals.
Oh, that's awesome.
It has all 26 of the dapper creatures in here with their stories. And so I've been selling those like crazy at most conventions, and not as much yet here, but I've been doing a lot really well with my originals.
That's awesome.
So that's been really nice for me.
I've heard a lot of people are buying original art. Like, Tim had someone buy original art. Frankie said he sold out of all of his canvases.
Oh my, awesome.
So, like, a lot of the artists that... So that's what's been really cool about this convention. There are a lot of, like, comic book artists and writers, which is very cool that they have that. But there's also a lot of just great original art here. Like, Juan was lamenting that he didn't have more money to spend on original art this year.
I understand. You can get the, like, flip-out frames. I have like a collection in my closet of the stuff that doesn't fit on the wall right now, and then I flip it out every 3 months.
The collect to display, I'm not on mic right now, but collect to display, her frames are absolutely amazing.
Oh my gosh, they are.
A top loader from her for all the pictures and stuff that you can just move in and out. It's amazing.
I want them deeply.
She makes awesome stuff.
They're so shiny, and they have like all the fun colors, and some of them look like blood splatter.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I need to get some of my monsters and put them in that.
So yesterday you debuted your Harley Quinn cartoon cosplay. How did that go?
Very first time. I had so many little kid pictures.
Nice.
Which was fantastic because I love to give art to little kids and everything.
You also
like
scared the absolute crap out of Juan, which was amazing.
I've been waiting and trying to hide all day so that if Juan came back, I could like freak the crud out of him and be like, I'm a statue. But alas, no, you guys snuck up on me instead.
Well, I'm glad that you're having a good con. We came into the con kind of like, how's it going to go this year? And it's been relaxed, which is really nice compared to, because the last one we went to was San Diego, which was like business, and just insane.
I met over 5,000 people when I was out there 1 year. I worked for Tokyopop for a short period of time, and I was running the booth with them. And it was insane. And I'm sure it's even bigger now. That was a few years back.
What was crazy was just like getting from space to space for scheduled interviews and stuff was just outrageous. Like, and it was just go, 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 go for the entire 5 days. And like today I'm like, oh, we're going to sit and eat some pretzel bites. I'm going to finish watching writing an article. We're going to go make sure Frankie Cerna's not dead. Like,
also a plus. Make sure everyone survives.
He's surviving.
That's good. Yeah, by the third day of the con, normally you're like dying.
Yeah, and it's chill. It's really chill. Nice.
I like that atmosphere, and it has been very easy to chat with people, and they don't... Sometimes the people come over and they feel super pressured to buy stuff. And I'm like, look, I'm just here to have a good time.
Right.
Like, this is, like, sure, you want to throw money at me? I'm not going to turn that down.
Of course.
Much like anyone. But, you know, I don't mind if they just come and talk art with me. That's perfectly happy. That's why people have an Instagram, I have a Twitter, I have all those. And I'm just like, oh, hit me up anytime. Like, I'd love to talk art with people.
Right. That's so cool. So you have your gentleman, your alphabet of gentleman animals, and you have a lot of your new things. So tell us a little bit about the stuff that you're offering, like, here at the con, but also, like, on your site and stuff like that.
So most of the originals are not on the store, but I can always put them up. But I do have
hold the mic up a little bit before Juan yells at me.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to also be loud. Ooh, that's even better. I could get you in trouble.
Yeah.
And then I have... This is the Squirrel Wedding Book. I kid you not, this is an entire book about two squirrels getting married. They had to invite Crazy Uncle Milton. He won't wear a tie, and he eats garbage.
That's a naughty squirrel.
So, yeah, it's a little bit of a really random book, but I enjoyed it. My friend in New York and I were just spitballing on Twitter one day, and she's just like, you should draw a squirrel wedding. And I'm like, okay. I was like, 16
sold.
Drawings later, it's now a book. I don't know what happened. And then I have my Into the Inkwell is also on Etsy, and it's all of my drawings from last year on Inktober.
Nice.
And so that's, I don't know if anybody, or if everybody's heard of that one, but it's, you know, one different ink drawing every day in October with a theme.
Yep.
And so I went through and I did it every day, and I recorded notes on it, and I was like, oh, hey, if you're also an artist, and you're fairly new to ink like I am, here's some things you should do to not be like me.
Nice.
And then I was like, oh, do you want some, like, fuzzy cats? This is how you make fuzzy ink look.
Oh, neat.
And so, like, I put a bunch of the notes in there, and I just put it all together.
So not just an art book, but kind of like a little tutorial instructional
tutorial.
Stuff.
This
or, like,
happens,
how I worked it out. And that's really cool, a little insight into the art.
Yeah, because I was like, some people like to just read about it. Some people are fellow artists, and they are like, how did you do this ink thing? And I'm like, I made it up. But I found out what you were supposed to do along the way.
I just learned by watching YouTube.
Yeah, I was like, I learned this thing, which I thought was cool, by seeing some other artists do ink. And I was like, I wonder if I can do that. Oops, the second time I will.
That's awesome. So tell all of our listeners how they can, like, find you online, like Instagram and Twitter, and of course find your Etsy store and stuff like that.
Absolutely. So my Instagram and Twitter are both at Fish with a Top Hat. My website is also fishwithatophat.com. And then you can find me on Facebook or on Etsy just by searching Dragon Crest Studios or doing //Dragon Crest Studios.
Awesome.
All one word.
Well, thank you so much for our third annual Colorado Colorado Springs Comic Con interview. We love talking to you, and I mean, like I say, every year, I love checking out your art online. It's some of my favorite stuff because you can't go wrong with animals in top hats.
I know, like, right? They're so dapper.
They are cute.
So much adorable.
I don't know that a man that likes metal and horrible things is allowed to be excited about cute things, but I am.
I mean, I listen to Rob Zombie while drawing, so.
There you go.
I feel like you're probably okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Just appreciate seeing you guys again.
Of course. Hey, everybody, on the floor of Colorado Springs Comic Con, I'm sitting here with legendary comic books writer Ron Mars, probably most famous for Green Lantern and Silver Surfer and Witchblade. How are you today, Ron?
I'm good. I'm in Colorado, so I'm like slightly short of breath, but it's a good burn. It's a good burn.
So is it atmosphere or no, just kidding.
Actually, we took a little hike this morning from the hotel and just saw some of the scenery, and it was, you know, like the going down part, that was great. The coming back up part,
that's awful.
You know, wasn't quite used to that, but it was spectacular.
So probably my first question for you is going to be based on the story that you just told this lady that bought your book. You were talking about kind of how you got involved in comics and how Jim Starlin kind of took you under his wing. Can you tell us that?
Yeah, I was buddies with Bernie Wrightson, Jim Starlin, Terry Austin, Joe Staton, guys who, you know, worked in comics and lived in the area where I did, in the Hudson Valley in New York State. And you know, I was tight with Jim. I copy edited Jim's first prose novel, and he liked what I did. And I was when I was in college. I was working at a daily newspaper as a sports reporter, and then I moved up to be the entertainment editor. So I always knew I was going to write. That was what I did. I just didn't know it was going to be comics. So when Jim made the suggestion, you know, it was kind of like, do you want to try your hand at writing comics? Well, duh. So I, you know, my first gig in comics ever, first time I even tried to write comics, was Silver Surfer Annual number 3, I think. That I co-wrote with Jim, which means that Jim sort of gave me the story and said, here, you do the work, so that I could learn how to do this job. And I've literally been doing it ever since. So Jim took me into Marvel, introduced me around. When he left the Surfer Monthly title to go do Infinity Gauntlet, and which I think maybe... I don't know. Somebody told me that turned into a movie. I heard something about that.
It's a thing, I think. I've definitely only seen it like five times.
We now live in a world where everybody knows who Thanos is, which is
weird.
Which is odd for me. But when Jim left Surfer, he somehow convinced the editor to turn it over to me, I'm sure with, you know, much arm twisting. And so that was my first regular comics gig, and I've been doing it ever since.
So when you were doing the work on Silver Surfer while Infinity Gauntlet was going on, there's a lot of like interdimensional travel and stuff that kind of feels like workaround so that you don't have to like inject right into Infinity Gauntlet. What were some of the challenges of like writing around that story?
Well, I didn't know it was a challenge because I was stupid. I didn't, you know, I was just like, I get to write comics. This is cool. So, you know, it was actually the best training for me in terms of working within a shared universe and learning how to work your storyline in and around other storylines, which is really part and parcel of what Marvel and DC do. And really all universes, you have to, you know, you have to play well with others. So my first gigs were playing well with others, were, you know, figuring out how to tell stories that were involved in the Infinity Gauntlet storyline, but stories that were not completely... that could stand on their own. We're not completely integral to reading Infinity Gauntlet, but sort of added to that tapestry if you were going to read everything. So, you know, I look back on it now as invaluable because I was able to figure out how to tell a story that meant something without stepping on the toes of what Jim was doing in Infinity Gauntlet.
So... your run in Green Lantern, a lot of people feel like steps on the toes of Green Lantern. When you, you know, when you were going into that, did you know it was going to be such a big deal to like write that particular like story arc of Green Lantern and then kind of dynamically change the book?
Oh yeah, I did not go into it blind. I mean, when DC called and offered me the book, I've told this story a few times. I had actually been in New York City at Marvel for the day to talk about Thor, which I was writing at the time, and came home, and DC called like 8 o'clock that night, which is not a normal time that you get a call from DC. Obviously, everybody was still in the office, and they were figuring out what to do with Green Lantern. So the initial offer was, you know, we'd like you to take over Green Lantern. And I'm thinking, oh, this would be cool because, oh, man, that Gil Kane-designed costume on Hal, and it's just going to be space stories with Hal Jordan. And then, the other shoe dropped. The other shoe was, here's your first storyline. Here's what we want you to do. And so I honestly had to think about it. I thought about it for about a week, I think, and obviously finally agreed to do the gig, but I knew that this was going to be controversial. People were going to be pissed off. But I wanted to do the gig. It was a chance to do a big deal storyline that had fairly permanent changes attached to it. And you don't always get to do those kind of stories. You don't always get to tell those kind of stories without editorial approving you ahead of time or even coming to you and saying, this is what we want you to do. So my opportunity there was to execute the storyline, no pun intended, that they wanted me to do for Emerald Twilight. And then the dessert of the whole thing was Daryl and I got to make up our new Green Lantern, and they really allowed us to do whatever we wanted.
That's awesome. When you went into doing Witchblade, what are some of the things that you took from like writing Green Lantern and writing Silver Surfer that you're like, I know these are things that work in comics that will work for Witchblade?
You know, I don't really go into stuff thinking like that. I think about what appeals to me about the character, because I think for me everything comes from character. Everything is based in character, and you tell, that's where you start to tell your stories from, rather than plot first and character second. So I looked at what appealed to me about Sarah Pazzini and what kind of stories I felt like I could tell with her that mattered. I didn't know it was going to be a good fit. You go into gigs and you kind of feel your way. I've done stuff like, you know, I did a year on Superboy, and I look back on those issues fondly, but it didn't completely work for me.
Right.
Because I got a bit into the run and realized I wasn't really invested in this, like the problems of a 16-year-old. It was not, I liked the character, I liked the cast, but it was not something that I was really invested in, dramatically. So my sensibility with Witchblade was, all right, let's put some flesh on these bones for Sarah. Let's make her a character that the audience is going to care about, whether she's using the Witchblade or she's wearing a metal bikini, or, you know, regardless of what's going on. I wanted to do with her basically the same thing that I did with Kyle Rayner, which is make that character matter enough and be interesting enough that the readers would show up, even if there were no superheroics or supernatural stuff or anything like that going on, if it was just that person's story for that day. I settled into Witchblade and really felt like, oh, this works. I care about her. I like the world that she lives in. I did 80 or 90 or 100 issues or whatever it was. You just never know. I was not a huge Witchblade fan before I took over the book. I don't know that I had read that many issues, period. Sometimes that's the way it goes. I think sometimes it's better if you're not a fan, like a hardcore fan of the material, because you can look at it with a fresh eye. I had read Green Lantern comics as a kid, but not, you know, it was not my thing. It was not, something I pursued voraciously. So maybe that's one of the reasons that it worked. My year on Thor, and Thor is one of my favorite characters. I worship the Walt Simonson run. My year on Thor did not work, and I maybe was too close to the material.
Huh.
I couldn't step back from it and see it professionally and see it dramatically as well as I should have.
That's an interesting thing because you're so invested, you can't like see the big picture kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you want to find a way to look at the character and look at that title in a way that maybe somebody else hasn't. So I think it's good to not be so dedicated to the material, to the character. But like on other stuff, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and I loved writing Star Wars comics. It wasn't even like a job. It was just, it was like me being 11 years old again. So I think it works both ways, but ultimately you have to find your way into the story as a writer that works for you. And hopefully what works for you works for the audience.
So as I was going through just kind of the bibliography to make sure I wasn't like missing something like, integral or huge, I happened to notice that you wrote a book in conjunction with Deepak Chopra.
Yeah.
How did that come about, and what was that experience like? I can't even imagine what that would be like.
Well, I did a fair amount of work for, it was called Virgin Comics at the time. It's now called Liquid Comics. It's still sort of an extension of the original Virgin Comics. So I did editorial stuff for them. I did some writing for them. The guy who brought me into Virgin Comics, which was a venture to sort of merge Indian storytelling with American comic sensibility, is Gautam Chopra, who is Deepak's son. So I had met Gautam at a convention because he was a fan of my stuff, a fan of cross-gen stuff in particular. And we had chatted, and then, like a year or two later, I get a call saying, hey, we're doing comics. Do you want to come help us out editorially and write some stuff? And one of the gigs that I did for them was taking a screenplay that Deepak Chopra wrote called Beyond, which was it's a dramatic kind of adventure screenplay, but it's also got a lot of metaphysical stuff in it, a lot of, what is reality. And so it was fairly would have been a really cool movie. And I think we did a pretty cool comic adaptation out of it. So what I did was adapt his screenplay, which meant turning like a 120-page screenplay into 4 issues of comics, which means we had to condense some stuff and chop some scenes. But it was a really interesting way to work, sort of trying to tell his story through the prism of American comics.
Seems like just such a fascinating project to end up on. Like, I've never read them. I don't think I've ever seen them. Like, and I probably will hunt them down because it just sounds so different.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. My only complaint about the gig overall was that I would have loved to do the whole thing in like 6 issues because we would have had a little bit more room. We had to truncate some stuff just because, generally sort of a page of script will translate into a page of comics, and we didn't have 120 pages. We had 80 pages. But it was still a pleasure to do, and I felt kind of flattered that he enjoyed what I did. That was the feedback that I got, that he was cool with what we did, and that's always it's a feather in your cap when you can adapt somebody's stuff and have them feel like you did them right.
That's awesome. So what are some things that people can look out for coming from you right now? Like, what are some of your ongoing projects right now?
Let's see. I am currently the editor-in-chief of Ominous Press, which publishes through IDW, and we also do some of our own stuff. I'm writing the miniseries Dread Gods with Tom Rainey on art, and Demigod with Andy Smith on art, which is, sort of adventure, sword and sorcery. It's big guys and girls with swords and monsters and that sort of stuff, which can't go wrong with that. Which I grew up on, so I love that stuff. We just put out a hardcover graphic novel called Beast of the Black Hand that Matthew Dow Smith drew. created by Paul Harding, who is a sculptor buddy of mine who works for DC Direct and Gentle Giant and Sideshow and a bunch of places. So that we just released this summer. Daryl Banks and I are working on a couple of things together that'll come out through Ominous. Rick Leonardi and I are doing a book called Dead of Night that'll come out through Ominous. And there's other odds and ends that are in the fire too. I think some of which are announced and some of which aren't. So, like I said, I know it's not like I get up in the morning and not know what to do. This is the business where you never quite catch the deadline train. You always get really close to the caboose, but you're never quite there. So it's a monthly business, and you just get up and crank it out every day.
And how can people, our listeners specifically, find you online to keep track of your voluminous amount of projects?
My woefully inadequate website is ronmars.com, which should be revamped sometime this year and will be updated. The easiest way to find me is on Twitter, where it's just @ronmars. If I'm appearing anywhere or doing anything or have thoughts on our criminal president, that's where to find them.
Those are the ones I like and share, man. They make me laugh a lot of the time. So, Ron, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Like, I for one, consider you one of the legends in the industry.
Oh,
so
thanks, man. I really appreciate you guys coming by. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Let's wrap up, because we're about a minute from your house. I'm dropping you off.
So
I'm not going in today. Yeah. I gotta get back home to my wife.
My wife. So
it goes.
We made this a pretty low key convention. We had a ton of fun. Thanks you guys for listening to the show. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox, on Twitter or Instagram @outsidelongbox. Obviously, the main place that you can go to find out anything about the show is www.totlb.com. You can email us at outsidethelongbox@gmail.com. You can give us a call at 970-573-6148. Leave a message on the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline, whether that be love or hate. We'd love to hear what you have to say. There goes my voice. And last but not least, there are two significant ways that you can support the show. You can go to amazon.totlb.com, buy things on Amazon, however you buy things normally. And that will give us a little bit of a kickback. And of course, you can go to patreon.com/TOTLB, where James Murray promised to donate us $1 million a month.
He did say that.
He did say that. Yeah, it was amazing.
You may never hear it.
And then you're going to hear it. But anyway, be sure to donate at patreon.com/TOTLB to help us keep the show going. I mean, it's not like going anywhere, but it helps us do things like this.
Yes.
So that you can hear our conversations with Carl Wetters. So you can hear us talk with Ron Mars. So you can hear us talk with Frankie Serna. So you can hear us, you know, sit at a table and get fucking hammer drunk with Brian O'Halloran, from inside Juan's car. I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan.
And this has been Thinking Outside the Long Box, Colorado Springs Comic Con 2018 edition.
Woo!
Have a good day.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.